most powerful members of our community.
I don't know what they're doing up there, and to tell you the truth, I don't want to know.
They meet at night behind closed doors.
The case of People versus Lawrence Monk and Arthur Coombs is dismissed. The defendants are hereby released.
Gotta know!
They have a shattering secret.
Right now, you're pure. Once you hear what I'm going to say, you'll lose that forever.
The answer is in here somewhere. It always is.
You think they're just going to sit around and let you blow them away? Do you? They can't.
Somebody is trying to kill you. If you'd listen to me, you'd find out the reason. Because I'm exposed all of it.
A secret that will affect us all.
This is very important. Who are these guys? I want to give them to you. Because I swear to God, I didn't know what was going down.
The Star Chamber. You'll know who they really are.
Prosecution has stated that this piece of evidence is crucial to their case. Whether that is true or not, my basis for ruling cannot be guided by that criteria. My criteria is, and always will be, the Constitution and the laws of the state of California. If, in fact, this single piece of evidence is that crucial, then it is the responsibility of the prosecution to make doubly sure that it conforms to the laws and precedents. The laws and precedents the prosecution is quite familiar with. My responsibility is to ensure a fair trial for the accused. If I knowingly allowed a procedural defect or a violation of the law to pass before me, I would not be fulfilling those responsibilities. I would be equally derelict if I simply allowed something like this to pass and forced the appellate court to overturn a conviction that was based on that evidence or procedure. I believe that the search in question would be found by any appellate court to be without probable cause. And as a result, as painful...
Republicans are cooperating, so the president has to go the executive order route.
I've got a pen, and I've got a phone, and I can use that pen to sign executive orders.
On my own, I'm going to act on my own. I'll act on my own.
I would remind the president he also has a constitution.
That of all of the dismaying aspects of the Obama presidency, perhaps the most dangerous is his consistent pattern of lawlessness.
Is the president, when he says that, is he saying that he's going to be going around Congress?
The president made clear that he will work with Congress where Congress is willing to work with him.
Republicans, obstructionists, because of Fox News and Limbaugh. And this, then, leaves our poor young president with no choice but then to violate the Constitution.
Congressman Trey Gowdy joins us. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm very well. Do you agree with Speaker Boehner that the president is essentially overstepping the Constitution? Because Speaker Boehner says that the president also has a Constitution and an oath of office he took when he swore to faithfully execute the laws of this country. Is that your thought about the president, or is the Speaker wrong?
Well, there are several instances that buttress Speaker Boehner's position, including the Supreme Court. He's going to lose on the HHS mandate. He's going to lose on recess appointments. He lost 9-0 in a religious liberty case called Hosanna-Tabor. You know, Greta, my perspective is this. He says he has a phone and a pen. I would tell him to be careful using the phone. This day and age, you never know who's going to be listening in on the conversation. But he's had a phone and a pen for 5 years, and we've have an anemic economy, a feckless foreign policy, and people are losing hope. So rather than accept responsibility, he wants to blame Congress. That's what he means by this, is I'm going to blame Congress. They're recalcitrant. They won't work with me. He's had half a decade, and here we sit.
Now, his press secretary said that the president wants to work with Congress. And of course, the president says that he has a phone. Do you see any indication that the president wants to work with Congress? Is that a fair statement by the press secretary or not?
No, ma'am, it is not. Jay Carney can't cite a single solitary example where this administration has wanted to work in good faith with House Republicans. Now, from 2008 2010, they didn't have to deal with us. They had all the gears of government, and they gave us Obamacare. When the president has the cards, he calls the bet. When he doesn't have the cards, he blames Bush, tsunamis, hurricanes, Fox News, racial animus, everyone but himself. And now, because he wants to retake the House and keep the Senate, it's probably popular to blame House Republicans. I might do the same thing if I were in his shoes. Or the other alternative is just to accept responsibility for the last 5 years on immigration, on mandatory minimum sentences. There are areas, mental health with respect to access to firearms, there are areas we're happy to work with him. But Greta, honestly, he doesn't have an interest in working with us. He wants to work with Speaker Pelosi, not Speaker Boehner, and that requires them to win in November and us to lose. And that's what all of this is about.
Is there any overgesture from the White House, from the president, to the House of Representatives, to the Republicans, even sort of like, let's talk, or he uses that phone? Is there any overgesture at all in the last 6 months?
In his defense, he did come to talk to us. It was probably about a year ago, and frankly, he didn't have to. He came to the Capitol and talked to us. But there's a level of distrust, in part because we do believe his overarching goal is for John Boehner to be the minority leader. So when you look at it from the standpoint that he wants to keep the Senate and retake the House, I mean, does he really have the country's best interest in mind? He certainly doesn't have the Republican Party's best interest in mind. He's had 5 years. We have a bad economy, a bad foreign policy, and people are losing hope. And he's going to lose in November unless he can find a scapegoat. And he's tried natural disasters, and he's tried Fox News, and he's tried everything except himself, and now he's going to try House Republicans. But no, he doesn't. Cite me an example of where he has picked up the phone and said, you know what, I want to give a little bit. On this issue, I'm going to give a little bit. When he asked the cards, look at last October. We asked for a delay in Obamacare, which God knows now we needed. Everybody concedes we needed.
Meanwhile,
he wouldn't even discuss that.
The Judiciary Committee grilling Attorney General Eric Holder on the constitutional basis for President Obama's executive orders. Here's part of that exchange.
How about the executive order that he proposed last night with regard to minimum wage? Would that be Category 1, Category 2, or Category 3?
Well, again, without having delved into this to any great degree, that was...
But you're the Attorney General. I assume he consulted you.
Well, there have been consultations done with the Justice Department.
Interesting. Very interesting there. Utah Senator Mike Lee is a member of the Judiciary Committee, as you just saw. He was questioning the Attorney General there. Senator, welcome. Good to have you here today.
Thank you, Martha.
You went through a number of instances where executive orders have been implemented, and you were pressing the Attorney General for what the process of determining whether or not they were constitutional is. What happened? Did they go through the Justice Department? Did they go through him? So after all of that, my question for you is, do you think that there is an evaluative constitutional process before these orders are put in place?
I would certainly hope that there is an evaluative process. I had assumed prior to yesterday that there had been one and that the Attorney General would have been involved in that. I was shocked to hear that perhaps that was not the case. But regardless, Martha, what we're concerned about here is the President issuing executive orders that have the effect of undoing existing statute, undoing existing law, without even the slightest explanation publicly as to what justifies the president in doing this. The president is not a law unto himself. If he wants to change the law, he has to go through Congress to do that. When he fails to do that,
executive
orders are bad. There are instances in which the law authorizes the president to act by executive order. Number two, it may well be the case, in fact, I'll concede for purposes of this discussion, it has been the case that presidents of both political parties have in the past abused power in their executive orders. But the fact that other presidents have done it doesn't justify it. Even still, what this president has done is unprecedented. What this president has done is to repeatedly change laws, even laws that he himself has pushed through Congress for his own political benefit under circumstances that he deems difficult, where he considers it inconvenient to go through Congress. And that's wrong.
Decisions like those involving the suspension of the employer mandate.
that is not only not authorized by the statute, it's flatly inconsistent with what the statute says. Secondly, to the extent that presidents in both political parties have strayed from the law and have acted unilaterally outside their delegated authority from Congress and from the Constitution, that's wrong. And the fact that other presidents may have done it in the past doesn't justify it now.
Okay,
stand back and simply ignore this. We can't ignore the fact that we've got a president who is acting as if he's got a government of one simply because he can't a shameless power grab that is designed to help the president and his political party achieve a particular outcome in a partisan election. And that's wrong. Look, the Constitution doesn't give the president that power. This power belongs to the people. The people delegate that power to their senators and to their congressmen. They don't give it to the president to act unilaterally, and there's good reason for that. The whole reason why we have a Constitution is to help prevent, to protect us against the excessive concentration of power in the hands of a few, or here, in the case of the hands of one person.
We've got 30 seconds left. I just want to ask you, on the merits, what about this argument, well, the companies need flexibility?
Okay, so on the merits, if the companies need flexibility, then the solution there is not to ignore the law, to pretend that the law allows this sort of thing to happen. The solution is for the president to come to Congress and make the case to Congress on the policy merits of this question that Congress needs to act. And then it's up to Congress to act at that point. It is not the president's prerogative to simply make this the law by the stroke of the executive.
President Obama of disregarding the law is really one of the most troubling aspects of this presidency. That over and over again, when he disagrees with the law, rather than try to change it, rather than go to Congress and try to change the law, he simply refuses to comply with it. And that's something that ought to trouble everybody. It ought to trouble Republicans.
These
two issues, the nuclear option and the president's lawlessness, are very interrelated. The reason that Harry Reid broke his word, repeatedly he'd said he wouldn't exercise the nuclear option, and then he just broke his word, just like President Obama did when he said, if you like your plan, you can keep it. The reason he did that is because the Democrats are very concerned about courts holding this administration accountable for their lawlessness, and in particular the D.C. Circuit. The D.C. Circuit is where a great many of these lawless actions are challenged. And this was all about wanting to pack the D.C. Circuit with judges that President Obama and the Democrats think will rubber stamp the president's lawlessness. You know, one of the things that's striking, and there have been Republican presidents, unfortunately, who've overreached, who've exceeded their executive authority. And when they've done that, there have been Republicans who stand up and call the Republican president to account, say the Constitution matters and no president, no man is above the law. One of the things that I've found most disappointing, where are the Democrats? Where are the liberals? Where are the journalists and the media calling President Obama to account for disregarding the Senate? And the reason that matters, listen, at the end of the day, the framers of our Constitution, one of the great geniuses they had, is they understood that by dividing power in government, if you can have the branches resisting each other, it protects the liberty of the people. Because the most dangerous thing for the liberty of the people is for power to be concentrated in one place where it can be directed against the people. Congress is failing in its job. The Senate is failing in its job when it doesn't resist against the president usurping power. And all of us should be concerned. Listen, if this were a Republican president, I promise you I would be every bit as vocal against a Republican president usurping power and violating the Constitution. And we really need to see some Democrats, some liberals standing up.
Senator Paul joined us. Nice to see you, sir.
Glad to be with you, Greta.
Okay, you filed suit already. You've taken him to court. What's the purpose of the suit?
You know, the question is whether a single warrant can apply to millions of Americans. We think that this is a general warrant, and the Fourth Amendment says a warrant has to have your name on it. It has to be individualized to the person and the place. And we fought the revolution largely over this point, that we were unhappy about British soldiers writing their own warrants and for them being nonspecific where they could go in anyone's house. Now it's your computer or your phone records, but it's the same principle. The warrant needs to have suspicion. The government needs to say to a judge, we think that you've committed a crime and we have probable cause that you committed a crime, present some evidence to the judge, and then the judge gives a warrant. But right now we have a warrant, and this was revealed by Snowden. We have a warrant given to Verizon for all of their phone calls. And we really think that's not specific, and we think it goes against the Fourth Amendment. We want to get all the way to the Supreme Court and in an open court decide whether this is constitutional.
Senator, I have the Fourth Amendment right in front of me, and I will tell you that any judge can be hard-pressed to in any way invalidate the NSA search and seizure. However, the wording of the Fourth Amendment is quite plain, that you need a warrant. That's what it says, and it has to particularly describe the place to be searched, the person or things to be seized. So the plain wording of the Fourth Amendment is very plain, and if the Obama administration or anybody else doesn't like it, we either should change the Constitution or get a particularized warrant to comply with it. But I don't think any judge is ever going to have the courage to go your way.
You know, we'll see. And the thing is you make a good point. I'm not against the NSA getting warrants. I'm not against the police getting warrants. If there's a murderer or a rapist running around in Washington, D.C., by all means, let's get a warrant and go in a house, capture them, or get their records. Same way with terrorists. But let's go ahead and name them, and then let's, if we want to look at the phone calls they've been making, let's name those people. And I'm not so concerned about how far out and how many hops you go out as I am that it be individualized and that there be suspicion. My fear is that we've gone so much into collecting everyone's records and spending billions of dollars and millions of hours doing this that we're letting down on the traditional police work that we need. The Sanarif boys, who were the Boston bombers, had traveled to Chechnya, were on websites. They were labeling themselves or their music, terrorist music. And they were communicating with people who were preaching forms of radical jihad and violence. And so they were connected, but we weren't connecting the dots, even though the Russians warned us about us, about them. These questions are being decided in secret in front of something we call the FISA court or a national security court. But they're not getting the light of day, and there's not a lawyer on both sides. One of the big things, and I know Judge Napolitano writes about this and talks about this, is that you can't find truth unless you have an adversarial process. You need a lawyer on both sides. The defendant needs a lawyer. FISA, there is no lawyer for the guy who thinks the Bill of Rights preserves our privacy. So this is a big deal. It needs to get into the Supreme Court. I hope it's my case, but if it's not my case, I hope a case gets into the light of day.
Chamber was established in medieval England to prosecute men of power and influence who could not be successfully tried in common law courts. A noble idea to promote justice amongst the, you know, corruption that was present. Yet it fell short because the fallacy of using bad means to secure good ends was accepted. And we all know that all human institutions are prone to appropriation and corruption. The Star Chamber devolved into a political weapon. These secret courts bypassed the common law courts, heard cases without indictments, juries, or witnesses. They considered silence as guilt and meted out horrible penalties just shy of the death penalty with extreme prejudice. Following civil wars, upheavals, and quasi-dictatorships, the Parliament finally abolished the court of the Star Chamber. Unfortunately, despite all the good things we Americans have inherited from centuries of British development of the concept of liberty, most notably the Magna Carta, we have also received the dark shadows of the Camera Stellata, the Star Chamber. Chiefly, today's secretive FISA courts, NSA-wide sweeping spying programs, and drone execution by executive fiat of American citizens who are not directly engaged in hostile combat. The court of the Star Chamber is anathema to the American spirit of ordered liberty and the acknowledgement that our rights come from God and are protected by the Constitution. Yet those who seek power and determine to silence dissent take advantage of emergencies and crises, real, imagined, and fabricated, to prey upon fear and bypass constitutional limits. For your own good, of course. Building on the aftermath of the 9/11 terrorist attacks, the Patriot Act, and other legal and extra-constitutional constructs, the general government has built a super-surveillance structure, draconian police state apparatus, and secret courts styled after the Star Chamber. This is turnkey tyranny, and don't think they won't use it. They most assuredly will. Enter the Rand page. The junior senator from Kentucky, Senator Rand Paul, is spearheading a mammoth class action lawsuit against tyranny. Ken Cuccinelli, who almost won the governorship of the Commonwealth of Virginia, will be litigating the case of Rand Paul versus Barack Obama. This is how you strike back at the empire and roll back tyranny and bind the men in government with the chains of the Constitution. Yet tyranny is ineffective unless it is funded, usually through plunder. The Democrats and the RINOs, Republicans in name only, have engaged in the most insidious form of theft, invisible plunder. They, this week, just wiped out the borrowing limits placed on the imperial executive through March 2015. Yet Senator Ted Cruz led the charge once again to prevent it. Sadly, he did not succeed, but he did succeed in exposing the RINO squishes, chiefly McConnell and Cornyn, with his filibuster against wiping out the debt ceiling. But see, Rand and Ted are doing a great job, but they can't do it alone. They need you. They need you to unite, to stand with them and their compatriots, form a phalanx, and loudly state, this far and no farther. We roll back tyranny, revitalize the Constitution, and restore the Republic now. You have a choice. Work hard right now to further liberty by having real conservatives and real libertarians take over the GOP, or watch the statists in both parties push their corporatist agenda to their benefit and our demise. Now is the last chance to stop those who want to fundamentally transform our republic into an empire abroad and a surveillance state at home. End the destruction of our economy by the Republican-Democrat duopoly and their Keynesian masters at the Federal Reserve by standing with the real conservatives. To defeat the cultural Marxists, the statists, collectivists, oligarchs, useful idiots, and their fellow travelers, especially the Democrat socialists, first you must crush the RINOs for liberty. You are live on Liberty's Thunder with Rex and Trog, irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex Evenstar, broadcasting to you from the Imperial City, home of the secretive Star Chambers.
I'm your co-host, Trog, broadcasting from my secret cave, which you will never know where it's at. Well, I'm almost depressed after hearing that. No, I'm just kidding. We're in a mess. You know, it's really interesting when you threw this title out there. I was intrigued, like I always am, because there's historical relevance, and I like to study history because, you know, all the lessons of life and civilization have already been told. We're not reliving anything. We're not recreating a new society. Man is still man. There's still corruption. There's still bullies. There's still psychopaths. There's still people who think that they're better than everybody else. There's people who want to plunder what other people have and think they have a right to it. There's people who, you know, strive to get power so they can tell other people what to do because they think they have an intellectual, you know, one-upmanship with the rest of the world. Mankind has never changed, never will. It is a liberal illusion of this society that they're trying to create. The scary part is that as you work towards over-equalizing human beings, and that's an interesting term I could get into, but that in this process that you create the tyrants and the systems of tyrannical government that our founding fathers fought against. Because all this stuff is, you know, you can just study England, study the Magna Carta, do some research on this Star Court concept that you based the show on, and you go, wow, we've been here before, and we're here again. But the difference is, the only difference is, you know, the process is the same. The difference is technology has changed, you know. And so here we sit in the exact same situation that they battled in England for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, until Parliament got enough power to finally abolish the system, the court, this secret court system that operate outside of the fundamental human rights of being able to face your accuser, of evidence having to be presented, of, you know, all the things that built the foundation for our court system in America, you know, that all men are equal before the law, blah, blah, blah. And so when you go back and you do some research on this, you go, wow, this is a bigger topic than anybody's having outside of a handful of people, like, you know, these three I can think of, four, you know, Gowdy, Lee, Rand, and Ted Cruz, you know, seem to be the most articulate and vocal on this issue. But I do find it interesting that nobody brings up the historical reference, because it's kind of scary when you look at it in the history, you know what I mean, in these secret chambers and these secret courts. And, you know, basically what happened was those who had the power, you know, they'd look across the land and go, I want that guy's farm, man. He's really doing well. And so they would drum up some evidence and take him to court, and the evidence could be on paper. They were, you know, didn't even have to have your witnesses there, and they could drum up some crap. And basically, think another word to think of is kangaroo court. And so they'd drum up this evidence and present it, and if you maintained silence, that proved you were guilty. I mean, they just basically cornered you, and they used it initially, and at least the research I did, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of it was used to take other people's property. And then it just got more powerful, depend on who was in power, depend on who your political enemies were. And then it just kept growing in power until, you know, it was this feared secret thing. I mean, it's almost like, you know, I don't want to say it was like the Inquisition, but it was that type of power that you had over people. So you were totally dependent on the favors of a handful of people in power. And that's what it really boils down to. It always boils down to tyranny. And if a court system or the police, or it doesn't matter. When our founding fathers put this country together, it was put together to give you maximum amount of freedom and the maximum amount of protection under the law. And that was the important part. And I really respect what Rand is doing with this lawsuit, because it doesn't seem that anybody in Congress has the gonads to do anything about this. And or they just hope they get in power so they have control of it. And that's really, you know, we talk about that a lot. But, you know, either way, whether it's, you know, lack of testicles or, you know, desire for the same control of the power, because, you know, this goes back, this whole FISA court goes back, way back. And it just seems to be getting more and more and more powerful. And the argument isn't truly being made. That's what's frustrating about it. You know, Rand talks about, you know, the warrant being able to, you know, they hand out one warrant. There's no, why are you getting this warrant, or who are the people you're searching? I mean, it's just someone generalized warrant. and they collect 10 million phone calls from AT&T. And that in itself is like, ooh, that's really bad. You know, and they claim that, oh, we need the metadata process, and that's what makes the system work. Oh, horseshit. Police work makes the system work. They couldn't even – the Tarnaya brothers, Tarnaya. The Boston bombing. Yeah, they couldn't even find these guys. In fact, they had interviewed these guys because the Russians had put up a red flag twice on them. And they even went there and had an interview with the guy and left. And the guy had websites. He had connections to terrorists in the other country right next to it, you know, but the Caucasus. And yeah, thank you. I feel like I'm in school. But, that was police. That was incorrect police work or politically correct. You know, we're not going to hassle this guy because we want to be political correct. Who knows where the corruption or the mistakes were made? But it was the same with pre-9/11. You know, they want to hang this fear over our heads for infinity, for all this power that they've grabbed and all this abuse of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. But, you know, even 9/11, for anybody who really has done the research, they knew about these guys. They knew about – there was over 100 terrorist cells in this country that were quietly rounded up after 9/11 and moved out of the country. People don't even know this crap. But they knew about this stuff, but they couldn't piece it together. You know, one of the guys that was learning how to take off a jet but not land it, there was, I think, 17 letters written by an FBI agent to his superiors going, hey, we got a problem here. And it was ignored. That's bad police work. You don't have to – spy on 316 million human beings to figure out you got a problem with somebody that fits a specific profile, and I'm not talking about necessarily race, but, you know, connections to people. They're from another country. They have, you know, it's a hotbed country. You know, just all those specific things, you know, four or five issues that say this guy could be a potential problem, so let's keep an eye on him, go to a court, present your evidence, and then do proper police work. Spying on American citizens has nothing to do with keeping us safe. And I'm going to sideline this for a second and talk about Germany and Merkel, who grew up in East Germany, and she's the president of Germany or whatever, their prime minister over there. But, you know, they were spying on her private phone, and she's pissed. And it's amazing how they try to justify it. And it reminds me of I listened to Dr. Tom Woods' video the other day. And he was talking about, you know, even like the war on drugs. He was saying, you know, I'm not pro-drugs or anything, but he says they were lying to us. They weren't trying to stop anything. They were lying to us about what the purpose of the NSA is. They claim that, oh, we're trying to make the world safe, you know, while we spy on Americans that have nothing to do with terrorism, while we fight Al-Qaeda and the Taliban in one country, and while we arm them and train them to invade another sovereign country. After a while, people quit believing the lies, and that's the problem. I have no problem with security in my country. I have no problem with justified wars. You know, I have no problem with kicking ass and taking names and doing what you have to do to make Americans safe. But all this other bullcrap is bullcrap. And thank God that Rand Paul is the only, you know, is getting up and doing something about it. I just wish more Americans gave a crap. That's my frustration, Rex. Go ahead.
I share your frustration. And the reason that you're frustrated is because the Republican Party professes to be the opposition to the big state Democrats, and yet, like you said, they don't have any balls. Why not? Well, probably because they get paid. They like their positions of power. They like getting drunk at the old Ebbett Grill. And frankly, I don't think they really have a problem with big government. They just want to be in charge of big government. So right now they're speaking against Obama and the Democrats as an electoral ploy. And once they get in charge, they won't roll it back. That's the fundamental problem. And the reason that the Star Chamber was so awful is because it was secret. There was no jury, and you were not equal before the law. It was pretty much just there to give the appearance of legality, but there was no respect for rule of law. It was arbitrary. you mentioned the Inquisition. The difference being the Inquisition is a legitimate office of the church that was inquiring into heresies. But the Inquisition had no juridical power. It was just there to investigate and enforce canon law. But any punishment had to be meted out by the state government. And the Star Chamber is a problem because it is the state government. There is no check. There is no other entity. There is no recourse. It is the ultimate and absolute arbiter of what happens. So whoever's in charge of the court pretty much has their will with no checks against it. And that's precisely the system that our founding fathers thought that they to thwart. And what
that
happens
was a huge
when
one.
You open up Yeah, when you open up the door, okay, and this is a problem that, yes, it allows some bad things to happen and continue and some criminals who should probably be put away to get off and that kind of thing, but you run the larger risk of creating such an absolute system that the innocent then become victims on a perpetual and regular basis, and therefore we are not equal before the law, and there is no rule of law. So the issue has to be sensible laws with checks and balances, and then even the most heinous criminals are afforded a defense. They have their due process. They are afforded a jury. They get to confront their accusers. This is of utmost importance. Otherwise, it isn't merely the criminals amongst us who commit horrible crimes against people and property, but it becomes a political weapon, and that's precisely what's going on here. These FISA courts may have started out with the intention of providing for warrants so that the government could acquire information in order to
quickly
secure conviction.
And secretly and blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
But as soon as you open up that door, then someone gets in power and says, okay, well, obviously some of the people in this country are not happy with what we're doing. There's this liberty movement. There's this Tea Party movement. There are these Christians, even the Occupy Wall Street initially before it was appropriated. How do we silence them? Oh, well, we got this court. Okay, great. So now we spy on everybody. We know where everybody is. We know what everybody's doing. And whoever we don't like, we target them with the IRS. We can now take them to secret courts. There's no jury. This is precisely how the constitutional framework falls apart. And without that framework, there's nothing but the will to power. And that seems to be okay when that will to power is aligned with your interests. But it won't always last. So the stupid thing, and Ted Cruz was talking about it in that opening clip, where are the Democrats? Where are the liberals? Where are the journalists? It doesn't matter that they happen to like this guy and that he's putting forward policies with which they agree. You give the presidency and the federal government this kind of power, and the next guy that comes in might not be so friendly to you, and he runs roughshod over you. This is precisely why when they started this crap on steroids during the Cheney presidency, when George Bush was president, Republicans were quiet about it for the most part. Of course, the more libertarian-leaning Republicans, the Ron Paul types, were talking about this. But most Republican voters, even the conservative ones, were totally cool with this because it was a Republican who was doing it, and we had to go get the foreign jihadis, and this was how to do it. And then comes Obama, who you don't agree with, and he takes Bush's policies and puts them on steroids, and suddenly you got a problem with it. And the Democrats are silent, and they're no longer even anti-war, right? But what happens when the next guy comes in? See, the issue is not about the policies being put forth. The issue is not about which party. The issue isn't about a political ideology or a party or anything else. It is about power. These people, no matter who they are, whether they're good, moral people, evil tyrants, it doesn't matter. The chains of the Constitution bind power, period, because all men, including and maybe especially those with good intentions, are prone to misuse power, and that's precisely what our founding fathers didn't want to have happen.
Yeah, you know, when I listen to you, it's almost like, are we really at this point? You know what I'm saying? Sometimes it's kind of like, wow. You know, I've always known that there was corruption. Bigger government got, the worse it, you know, the worse it became. I've lived in capital cities a good chunk of my life. I've been around, you know, pretty heavy bureaucracies. I watched the way they work. And a lot of it, you know, I've thought about what I call lazy corruption, you know, people who can't make it in the real world, get them a good state job, and then they get them some power because they can control your, you know, your building permits and things like that. And I've seen that and lived through that for years, and never really enjoyed it, and was always very anti-corrupt government, you know, and throughout my life because of those experiences. But now we're at a different level. Now we're at, you know, I've watched the power evolve from the states and move into more of a centralized government. The bureaucracy get bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, it used to be growing up, the federal government was over there, and, you know, it's me and my state, my local and my state government that I had to deal with. But now it's just, it's everything is federal. Every aspect of our lives, from your light bulb to your toilet you can buy, you know, the kind of car you can buy. And with Obamacare, I was posted an article a minute ago from Ben Swan and parts of Obamacare that nobody is even talking about. I made a comment a few weeks ago, I don't remember when it was, but I said something to the effect that this is the new Constitution, and it isn't about health care, and most of this is about control. And it's about money, you know, which is another, you know, method of control. It's going to hurt a lot of people, but a lot of people don't know. And it's, again, you know, you'd think Fox would report on this stuff, but they don't cover it. I just listened to that clip with Dr. Craig Roberts, who was, you know, one of the author of Reaganomics, a very brilliant man. And he was talking about Obamacare, and he said that there's things in this that people don't even realize. You know, if you're poverty-stricken, you're going to be shoved into Medicaid. And what's going to happen is there's all these laws that say that, you know, when you die, you lose all your property. And you can't pass anything on to your kids because you've been part of the system. He said that was one thing that just is not being talked about. There's another thing, which is a transfer of wealth. But not from the wealthy to the poor. That's from the poor to the government. And the other thing is that, let's say you're at a level, financial level in your life where you can be subsidized, and then you start to try to climb in life, and you, let's say you get a better job, pays $15,000 more a year, and all of a sudden you're not in a subsidy parameter anymore. You got to pay that subsidy back. I mean, there's all kinds of things in this bill, not to get off topic with Obamacare, but in this bill that are totalitarian in nature and designed to take from you and to make you more dependent on the government. And this is, I wish, and it just blows me away that Democrats think that they're the party of freedom and liberties, especially civil liberties. And when in reality, their party is a party of commie takeover. You know, maybe at one time in the 60s, they were all into civil liberties and freedom and things like that, and that was really wonderful, and they really adopted some of those things. But these people, you know, these hippies of the past, John Kerry, okay, you know, that used to protest against the war, are now some of the most warmongering control freaks that walk the face of the earth. Power corrupts, you know, and that's why our founding fathers bred into the Constitution. Why I have the Bill of Rights up, and when you just look at these things, you know, the First Amendment, Second Amendment, and you just go down through that, and it's so simple, but it's so deep, it's so wise, and it's so powerful. And if you don't protect those things, kiss it goodbye, because you know, they love to beat up on Russia all the time. You know, especially as Russia has rebuilt itself and economically, you know, powerful again in the world and influential, and they love to try to, you know, paint Russia as the, you know, the Cold War communist country. And in reality, that's who we are now, or very close. And that's the scary part, because once they have all these controls in place, from the court system to spying to, you know, your Second Amendment issues, you know, all this stuff, property rights, Agenda 21, whatever you want to get into, all these issues are directly focused at removing those Bill of Rights. Because once those God-given rights are gone, property, freedom, life, you know, trial by jury, you know, those components are gone, then it's whoever's in power basically controls everything. Because under Obamacare, if you study it, they're going to be telling you, you're overweight. There are a lot of obese people in this country, and it's sad because I've been an athlete all my life. And it's been a big issue, and it's an issue in our health care, and it's crushing our health care, especially with kids starting out obese so young, because that means they get into those later years diseases much younger in life. It's an epidemic problem. And once Obamacare is locked and loaded, I guarantee you they will tell you what you have to do. They will control every aspect of your life. Because if you're a burden on their economic system, which is already broke, you know what I mean? We're coming into this thing with a $35 trillion Medicare unfunded liability, and now we're adding another government-controlled subsidy on top of it. Give me a break. I mean, that in itself should just tell you to run away. But people are stupid, and they think it's about pre-existing conditions. Well, if you can't afford your damn health care, and you can't afford your $5,000 deductible, and you can't afford your copay, your pre-existing condition ain't going to work for you. Yeah, I got insurance, but I can't afford to use it. So how did that
it's
work
a post-existing
out for
you? Condition. It's a post-existing condition now.
My God, people are stupid, Rex. I'm sorry, but it's frustrating sometimes to think how simple this stuff is if you take the emotion out of it, step back, and look at the facts. Well, I don't care what issue it is. The Second Amendment, it's absolutely not about hunting rights. It's absolutely about the ability to protect yourself, number one, and number two, keeping the government at bay. Our founding fathers knew that. It was that simple. And I'm not saying, you know, we got to be in militias and all that crazy crap because I'm not that kind of person.
Well,
we don't have to be in
militias, but they're state militias. That's the problem.
Legal ones.
A private militia is nothing more than a gang, but we do have to have the state militias, and that's a pretty big thing. You touched on a couple of things there, and I agree with you 100%, and I think, yes, people are stupid, and Americans are very, very stupid, but not the people who listen to this show. People who listen to this show are smart, they're active, they're conservative, they're libertarian, they're the grassroots. You're the salt that's going to fix this. But not if you guys are nitpicking with each other and fighting with each other over little, you know, quibbling issues. You have to unite right now. You have to reinforce the champions of liberty that are up there on that hill fighting for you. And then you can fight about all the little stuff later. First, we've got to tip the scales back towards the constitutional boundaries. We are so far out of the boundaries right now, it's just far too frightening to be fighting with each other. And I agree with you. It is simple, okay? The law is supposed to be simple. Truth is simple. And the way this country is supposed to operate is supposed to be simple with diffusion of power so that problems and issues can be solved at the lowest level possible, the individual, the family, the community, if necessary, the local government, the state, and only when absolutely necessary, the federal government. That's how it's supposed to work. And you mentioned those hippies. You know, those hippies come neocons, are the worst warmongers out there, just like in the USSR, you know. And you know, we did a show a while back, USSA, you know, back in the USSR, and we talked about that. We touched on it. And all of our shows, by the way, every single show we've done from the beginning, which is almost 2 years ago now, are available on our Blog Talk Radio page. So just go to blogtalkradio.com, search out Liberty's Thunder, and on our page, you just scroll down. Every show is listed there. You click on the hyperlink. It plays right in your browser free of charge. You can go below the scrolling graphics. There's a download link. You right-click on that. You get an MP3. You can listen to your MP3-enabled device. You can burn a CD and give it to people. Take it to your Campaign for Liberty meetings, your Tea Party meetings, Republican Party meetings, AA meetings, whatever. Just get that information out there or email the MP3. Remember that you are the only reason our audience has grown. You, who are listening now, are the only reason anybody knows this show exists. Chris and I take no money for doing this. It actually costs us money to do it. If we wanted to turn it into a profit-making enterprise, instead of a three-hour show with 1 hour of vital news clips that you may not have heard, you would get a three-hour show with 1 hour of commercials. If that's what you want for us to grow, we'll do it. But frankly, I think it's much more important for the grassroots to hear the news that they might have otherwise missed from the mouths of those who are fighting the battles. Like you heard at the beginning clip, Trey Gowdy, and Mike Lee and Ted Cruz and Rand Paul. You got to hear this stuff, and you got to be armed with that information to get it out there. The only way that happens is if you keep the show alive. You retweet it when you see it. You share our pictures on Facebook. Our show page on Facebook is Liberty Thunder. Make sure you like the page. Make sure you right-click on the like button and say get notifications so that Facebook doesn't hide us from you. Go to Chris's group, Liberty's Talk. Lots of vital information there that you're not going to get if all you do is watch the Fox Noise and read, you know, the Washington Examiner. So you really got to get this information because you got to get it out there to the public. People smell that something is wrong. A lot of them don't know what it is. And the Republican Party, run by the likes of Karl Rove and Rince Pubis and Johnny Booner and Mitch McConnell, are going to use that momentum against Obama and the Democrats to reelect Republicans who are going to change nothing. We need to elect Republicans who actually believe in the Constitution. And that doesn't happen with the mass media marketing corporatist propaganda. It's only going to happen with you personally touching people, talking to them, inviting them to a Campaign for Liberty meeting, inviting them to meet the circle, inviting them to listen to this show, inviting them to a Tea Party meeting, especially if it's a real Tea Party, because a lot of the Tea Parties have been appropriated by the RNC. That's what it takes. That's what you have to do. And you have to really pay attention to what's going on because I think two of the most important stories, the things that we're focusing on tonight, are being underplayed in the mainstream media, and most conservative and even slash libertarian voters may not be aware of them. Rand Paul's lawsuit against the NSA is huge. Now, it's not just about the NSA spying. This dovetails onto drone strikes against Americans. It dovetails onto the lawlessness of the general government. It focuses on power, and it also creates a situation where your representatives can actually challenge the executive. You know, there's an issue of whether senators and congressmen have standing to sue the executive over executive overreach. But Rand Paul is suing Barack Obama in a class action lawsuit on behalf of everybody who has been spied on because they have a phone, an email, or whatever. And that is very, very key. Go to Rand Paul's website, Rand 2016, and you can find the lawsuit there. You can get on board, get people involved. It is huge and it's important. The other thing we're going to talk about is the erasing of the debt ceiling. There is no debt ceiling. They keep talking about Congress just raised the debt ceiling. They didn't raise it. They wiped it out. It doesn't exist until March 2015. There is no limit on the amount of money that the executive can borrow, putting you and your children and your children's children in debt. No limit whatsoever. This is rampant power grab given to Barack Obama by Congress. So does that mean Barack Obama's a problem? You bet he is. Is he the problem I'm worried about? No, because he's just the current socialist meat puppet. The problem is the Congress, which could have checked him and put him in his place, even if they only control one chamber, and even if they happen to be a minority in that chamber, which they're not, allegedly, they have the constitutional power to stop him. They're not using it. Whose fault is that? Johnny Boehner, Eric Cantor, Mitch McConnell, and the RINOs. And that's the problem. Believe it or not, we've already killed an hour, Chris. I've got an NSA clip, but you want to throw anything out there before? Well, we had a long intro. There's a lot of data to get in there.
I just felt like I just got on here. The debt ceiling issue brings up an important topic because, and I don't know how many people that listen to us have ever gone after we're done and we talk about the Constitution or the Bill of Rights or whatever, or the original intent, have taken that as a cue to go actually read it and embrace it and understand it. You know, when you get up in the day in this modern era since the crash in 2008 or even since 2011, but or 9/11, but definitely since the crash, and you look at your country, how do you feel inside? Do you feel like this heavy burden? You know, no wonder people, you know, spend their lives watching football, baseball, American Idol, reality TV, you know, and bury themselves in drugs and alcohol. You know, it's tough out there. And it's not getting better. And that's the sad part, is that everybody's chirping the same bullcrap. including Fox News. You know, they like to talk about the stock market. They like to talk about this, about that. You know, but they don't, you know, they'll talk about the unemployment number based on the government BS. You know, that those are the only people, those are people actively on the government rolls who are receiving unemployment. So that's 6.6% or 7% or whatever. But, you know, they don't talk about the other 40, 50 million people just given up, you know, that no longer collect unemployment, or the tens of millions of people who, you know, lost unemployment and then rolled over and signed up for disability, you know, to rake the government for some more money because there's no frickin' economy. It's not recovering. There are no recovery issues. There's no, the industry has pretty much left the country. You know, the housing bubble of what it was and what developed it and the growth, you know, they're not building tens of thousands of houses every day all across the country. You know, they like to tell you that the housing market's improved. Well, when you keep giving away cheap money, two things happen. One, existing assets get bought up because money's cheap, you know, low interest, gets bought up by a handful of people at the top who have control of that money, and the stock market, you know, rocks and rolls because they're sitting on all this free money. It is literally free. You know, the Fed is handing it across to the first layer of wealth in this country, the bankers and the investors, at 0%. So here's $10 million. Here's $10 billion. Here's $85 billion a month. Oh, well, it's only $75 billion a month right now. Oh, we took it down to $65 billion, and everybody freaking out. So, you know, in a couple months, it'll be $100 billions a month. So they're printing it, handing it, creating debt on it, and handing it to these top tier level investors, and then they're playing in the stock market, and they're buying everything up because it's cheap, and that's what creates massive bubbles. Now, with this thing, this other point that you were talking about, this no debt ceiling until March 15th, that means these insane people, and I don't know how many people listened to Janet Yellen's testimony the other day on the House floor, but it was gobbledygook. It was insane, and it scared the crap out of me to think that somebody of that level of ineptitude is running the Fed. Oh, God. Some days, man. It's a bad movie, right?
She's a Yalien.
Yeah, it's got to be a Yalien.
We'll call it the Yalien, the Yalien from Brooklyn. Let's get into that debt stuff. But first, let's talk about Rand Paul's lawsuit, and then we'll get into Ted Cruz and his filibuster, the filibuster you never heard about because, well, frankly, the Republicans really hate him for doing it, which is why you should love him. And when I say love him, I don't care if you like Ted Cruz or like his personality, if you're worried that his wife works for Goldman Sachs, blah, blah. I don't care. What I care about is what he says and what he does. And we're going to talk about why that filibuster is important. But the first thing we're going to get into is stupendous. And I can't believe it's not getting more attention. It's up to you, Mr. and Mrs. Grassroots America. You've got to get this out there. You've got to tell people about it and tell them why it's important. This isn't some stunt. This isn't some ploy. This is a legitimate lawsuit naming President Barack Obama, Eric Holder, and the NSA for spying on you. Now, I know a lot of people just throw all their shit up on Facebook and, you know, don't care that they've just told someone that they're vacating their house for 2 weeks and what their address is, but that's voluntary. That's you choosing to do that. I don't think you should, but that's a different story. The problem with the NSA wiretapping spying program, metadata mining, is that they're grabbing all of your information without your permission, without a warrant, without probable cause, without suspicion. The only reason governments do that is because they want to know who are the bad cogs, who are the ones that are not falling in line, who are resisting. This is huge. This is about a 12-minute clip. Chris and I'll be on the other side to discuss this, but pay attention because this is, we're stringing stuff here together that maybe a little bit popped up on CNN, some popped up on Fox News, and some was over here. You haven't seen it together. What the news media does, and I'm talking about Fox News, certainly not news, MSLSD, all of them, what they do is they give you the facts and the data, and then they bookmark it with frivolous crap and counter-messaging so that it gets lost in your mind and you get their spin on it instead of the facts. Here is the lawsuit that Rand Paul is engaging in right now with Ken Cuccinelli as the litigator, who was the Attorney General of Virginia and ran for governor and almost won a grassroots conservative victory in the Commonwealth of Virginia. He lost because the rhinos at the RNC screwed him over and gave us a criminal Democrat governor in this Commonwealth. They did that because they want to shut you down in 2014 and 2016. And this is really, really important because this is Skynet.
Sir, Pentagon's on the secure line. The chairman. All right.
Brewster.
We're hoping to hell here you've got some kind of solution for us.
I know what you're looking for, sir, but Skynet is not ready for a system-wide connection.
That's not what your civilian counterparts over there just told me. They say we can stop this damn virus. Now, I understand there's a certain amount of performance anxiety over there, but your boys are saying that if we plug Skynet into all of our systems, it'll squash this thing like a bug and give me back control of my military.
Mr. Chairman, I need to make myself very clear. If we uplink now, Skynet will be in control of your military.
But you'll be in control of Skynet, right?
That is correct, sir.
Then do it. And Brewster, this thing works. You get all the funding you ever need.
Yes, sir.
On behalf of myself, FreedomWorks, and everyone in America that has a phone, we're filing suit against the President of the United States in defense of the Fourth Amendment. At this time, I'd like to introduce our co-plaintiff, the President of FreedomWorks, Matt Gibby.
FreedomWorks is participating in this class action on behalf of our staff, on behalf of our 6 million-plus members, and frankly, on behalf of anybody that has made a phone call since 2006. I don't think this is a partisan issue. This isn't Republican versus Democrat. This isn't about the Obama administration. This is about a government that's crossed the line. We're going to put that genie back in the bottle because the Bill of Rights is a sacred document to everybody that's an American citizen.
You've heard from my clients, Rand Paul and FreedomWorks representative, their president, Matt Gibby. Today we filed a class action, or filing a class action lawsuit to vindicate the Fourth Amendment rights of every American.
Senator Rand Paul announces a class action lawsuit against the president over gathering of Americans' phone records. Other top intelligence officials, including the NSA director, also named in the suit. The senator speaking to reporters about an hour ago.
On behalf of myself, FreedomWorks, and everyone in America that has a phone, we are filing suit against the President of the United States in defense of the Fourth Amendment. We will ask the question in court whether a single warrant can apply to the records of every American phone user all of the time, without limits, without individualization. This, we believe, will be a historic lawsuit. We think it may well be the largest class action lawsuit ever filed on behalf of the Bill of Rights.
Well, reacting to Senator Paul, the Justice Department just released this statement saying this: we remain confident that the program is legal, as at least 15 judges have previously found. Well, we have our own judge today, Judge Andrew Napolitano, our Fox News senior judicial analyst. What do you think, Judge? Is there a case here?
Yes, I think Senator Paul has an excellent case, and he's right. It will be the biggest class action in support of the Bill of Rights, of the biggest class action in history. A class action is when a small group of plaintiffs, in this case himself, sues in behalf of others who've suffered the same injury. The NSA has, by its silence, pretty much admitted that the others includes everybody in the United States.
But in that circumstance, when you're representing so many, do you have to give examples for each and every person that you're representing and how they have been harmed?
Very good question. No. The court will allow what's called a bellwether, a fancy legal phrase for we'll take one or two people as examples and we'll assume that the injury that those one or two suffered are common among the class. That's what happens in a class action case, say in a consumer product situation. Somebody's harmed by a consumer product, and they sue on behalf of all consumers who've used the product, even though the level of harm is different. Here, the level of harm is essentially the same, and here the NSA essentially admits what it's been doing. It's been gathering this evidence about all Americans on the basis of single, what we call general warrants, not warrants that identify the specific target. Senator Paul and his fellow plaintiffs are merely merely asking a federal court to decide if that's lawful, and if it's not, to make them stop.
Is it a constitutional question?
Yes, it's a constitutional question, and here's the constitutional question in a nutshell. Does the requirement of the Fourth Amendment, which says when the government wants to search something, like your phone records or your phone calls, it has to identify the person to be searched, the place to be searched, and it has to come up with a reason to search that individual. Does that apply to the NSA? Because the NSA says, we're not governed by the Fourth Amendment. We're not interested in solving crime. We can listen to what everybody says, whether we can identify them or not.
Well, and that's what the Justice Department is saying. In their
yes.
response, 15 judges already said that's okay. So how is this case different?
Because 13 of those 15 judges are on the FISA court. And when the FISA court makes a ruling, there's nobody resisting the ruling. It's a judge with just the government appearing before it. The other two judges went both ways on this. They were federal judges who had trials in their courtroom with lawyers representing the NSA and lawyers representing the plaintiffs. And one of these judges said, this is unconstitutional. You can't have one warrant for 100 million people. And the other said, it is constitutional. It's an appropriate response to 9/11. So those two differing decisions mean that this case will eventually get to the Supreme Court. We'll probably have a third decision from this case that Senator Paul just filed.
Andy McCarthy was on our show just last hour. Bob Mueller, former director of the FBI, says Andy's one of the finest prosecutors in history when it comes to combating terror.
I agree with Bob Mueller and Andy's qualifications.
One of the things Andy and I were talking a little bit about this topic, and he said one of the things that can come up here is not so much a constitutional issue, but an issue about the Patriot Act. And he says that the NSA has, and this argument has been made in court, and maybe it does need to be made, that the NSA is saying we have to collect everybody's phone records. We have to get the judges and Johns and Keiths and everybody else that's in our room right now
right.
so that the algorithms work, so that we can actually see the people that are doing the bad things. We need everybody's records.
Well, then,
what about that argument?
Then they would need to change the Constitution, because the Constitution expressly prohibits it. One of the reasons it prohibits it is because what the NSA is doing to us today in 2014 is substantially similar to what British soldiers did to us in the colonial era. They got a general warrant in London from a judge who met in secret, which authorized them to search any of the colonists they wanted for whatever they wanted to find. They came over here in this country, presented the general warrant on various colonists' doors, and started searching away. Guess what? It was the last straw before we fought the revolution.
So could you do something, and I'm not trying to throw a bunch of hypothetics, but Rand Paul was just talking about the 300 million Americans whose phone records have been collected.
Right.
What happens if it's something general for a specific group? Still millions of people, but we're going to look at 25 to 35-year-old males in this country, because this is the group we're targeting.
You know,
would that be allowed?
This is the great clash between privacy and safety. And when people are afraid, most people will opt for safety rather than privacy. They'll say anything to keep me safe. But they don't realize that they are losing the safety of their liberties. The Constitution was written to force the government intentionally to jump through hoops before it could invade our privacy. Requiring the government to identify whose phone calls it wants to listen to is not asking very much. It's just asking them to follow the Constitution.
Well, what do you think families of the victims of 9/11 would say to that? Sure, we want our liberties, but if we had these programs in place, then our relatives wouldn't be dead.
I think that families of 9/11 have a very legitimate beef that the government should have done a lot more to have kept their loved ones alive, and I share their grief. But I also share the love of the Constitution that many of those people that now are in heaven had. We don't want a government here that is just like the governments we have fought overseas, tyrannical and not respecting a freedom. We want governments that respect freedom, that do things the right way.
Real quick, what do you think the timeline is on this? I mean, we have the announcement. What are the next steps?
Senator Paul's
where does it
case?
Go? If it's going to the Supreme Court, what are we looking at?
It'll probably be assigned to a federal district court judge in Washington, D.C. this afternoon or tomorrow morning. The government will answer. There'll be oral argument. I would expect a decision by September. I would expect this will be on the Supreme Court's docket about a year to a year and a half from now. But ultimately, it will get there, because so many judges are starting to weigh in that the whole legal community and judicial world will beg for one firm and consistent answer.
It'll be fascinating. Judge,
yes.
Great to have you on set.
Expectation of privacy and that
you.
Information from government. And so for government to come get that information, they've got to have a reason that they can tell a court that they have a suspicion that that information could be connected to either a crime or international terrorism or intelligence gathering. And they're not doing that in this case. They're literally sweeping up every phone lines contacts, whether you make the phone call or receive the phone call, all across America. These are an awful lot of violations of the Fourth Amendment, as Senator Paul said this morning. Literally in the hundreds of millions of people we expect are affected by this. And we believe when this is all said and done, when we get through the court process, the court will have found that, particularly in light of the technology the NSA is using and that is available to them, that in this day and age, the expectation of privacy that we are asserting is reasonable, and the federal government is violating the Fourth Amendment by sweeping up all this private information.
Our founders never intended for Americans to trust their government. Our entire Constitution was predicated on the notion that government was a necessary evil to be restrained and minimized as much as possible. When we learned that the NSA was collecting the phone data of every American last June, it posed a serious constitutional question. Do we no longer have a Fourth Amendment? The Fourth Amendment was included in the Constitution precisely to prevent the issuing of general warrants in which blanket authority is given to government to spy on citizens at will. Individualized suspicion of citizens' records is precisely the kind of overreach we fought a revolution over. The colonists did not appreciate a British government that would go door to door searching anyone and everyone without probable cause or suspicion. The lesson of the American Revolution was that this should never happen again, and yet the NSA's data collection program is the modern equivalent of this practice. President Obama cited Paul Revere in his speech, but Paul Revere rode through the streets to tell us the British were coming, not the Americans are coming. The Constitution is not a negotiable piece of parchment to be ignored or abused at the president's whim. Washington leaders are expected to obey and protect what they took an oath to uphold. And if this means taking them to court over it, so be it. If the seizure and surveillance of Americans' phone records across the board is now considered a legitimate security precaution, there is literally no protection of any kind guaranteed anymore to any American citizen. We cannot allow this administration to continue to treat the Constitution as a dead letter. I will continue to fight this overzealous government surveillance program, and I invite you to join me. Today is the day we begin to fight back. If you want to learn more, visit defendthefourth.com.
Cyborgs don't feel pain. I do. Don't do that again. Listen and understand. That Terminator is out there. It can't be bargained with. It can't be reasoned with. It doesn't feel pity or remorse or fear. And it absolutely will not stop. Ever. Until you are dead.
That was Senator Rand Paul sounding a little bit like John Connor, and the website he mentioned was defendthefourth.com. Get there, defend the fourth. Now, Skynet may not be self-aware, but don't think for a second that this NSA crap is not Skynet being used by the men in government to put a boot on your neck. That's exactly what's happening. Now, why do they want to collect all this information? You see, they have to collect this information so they know what you're up to, and they know who needs to be sent to the Star Chamber. Now, the Star Chamber is not where Kim Kardashian takes a crap. The Star Chamber is a secret court that doesn't have juries, doesn't have witnesses, where you have no Fifth Amendment protection. That's what a FISA court is. That's what we're talking about. That's precisely what they are doing. Now, why do they need to monitor everything and have these secret courts? I'll tell you why. Because they stepped out of the bounds of the Constitution, and James Madison, who probably knows a thing or two about the Constitution since he wrote most of it, in Federalist Number 62, this is in 1788, wrote, "It will be of little avail to the people that the laws are made by men of their own choice, if the laws be so voluminous that they cannot be read, or so incoherent that they cannot be understood. If they be repealed or revised before they are promulgated, or undergo such incessant changes that no man who knows what the law is today can guess what it will be tomorrow." Does that sound a little bit like Obamacare? Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
That's why they need this,
Madison,
Chris. Because
James Madison had a time machine.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. Actually, I think Ron Paul had a time machine. He went back and gave James Madison the Constitution. But, yeah, that's this is insane. They passed laws that they haven't read, that no one can make hide nor hair of. They give all of this rulemaking power to unelected bureaucrats who pass all these laws that the people's representatives don't even know what the regulations are, and then everybody becomes a criminal. And they can get you at any time. That's why they need to spy on you, and that is precisely why they need star chamber courts. It's crazy, isn't it?
Well, and the other factor is the IRS, the money control. They can destroy your life. You know, they don't have to necessarily take you to a court. They don't have to throw you in one of those camps everybody talks about.
FEMA camps.
I was going to say fusion centers and spy centers. But, you know, it's all those models of control that you can just, you know, people just live in fear. They're afraid to do anything. You know, that whole concept of, you know, whether it's a license plate, you know, database system, or it's your cell phone and they track everywhere you go, they get your contact list, they link you to everybody. See, that's the problem, is technology is so powerful. And here's another thing, Rex, and these are things about human beings, about citizens or subjects, depending on who you want to talk about or how you view them. But, you know, when you look at things like, why in the hell do you need my contact list? Why in the hell do you need to know where I'm driving? You know, I was born and raised here. I've been here my whole life. I, you know, go back to on one side of my family, back to, you know, Pilgrim era. What the hell are you doing? Why do you need to know that stuff? See, the thing that when everything gets complicated for me, it's always the why question. You know, Merkel in Germany is PO. Now, Germany is one of the few solid countries in the EU that isn't just, you know, totally falling apart. It has been for many years, and they also have probably one of the largest gold reserves in the world. I think they're number two or three, depending on how many thousand tons China got last year, or Russia for that matter. But, you know, they were telling everybody around the world that, you know, we're doing this to protect the world from terrorists. This is our system. Well, then the reality is they're really doing it so they can spy on people so that they have better economic negotiations and trade deals and blah, blah, blah. So which is it? In other words, the thing, and it goes back to what Dr. Woods was talking about. He said the thing is that when you find out they're lying to you and they have all this power, that's when you should be concerned. Because is it because you want marketing data on everybody in America so you know how they think and what's important to them so you can be a better politician? Or is it because so you can oppress people? Or is it because you're trying to keep us safe? You know, in other words, what's the truth? And when the government
lies,
yeah, and when the government lies to you and then they get caught or exposed and then they lie about it, while they continue to do it to you, you have a problem. And if you don't see that as a problem, then you're a freaking subject. And you're just a slave to a system. Work, pay your bills, pay your taxes, and work until you die and move on. You know, that's all you are. You're just a work unit. You know, you're not a citizen. You know, if you want to live free, you know, pursue your dreams, be able to be a human being, not live in fear. You know, you go outside your house, you know, and you start looking up in the air. You know, they're going to have 30,000 drones in this country with all the exposure about drones, with all the issues of the Fourth Amendment and privacy. They are doing it anyway. With all the issues and all the complaints and all the frustrations across the country over this NSA crap and spying on citizens and these mass warrants, you know, for all 316 million Americans and all the frustrations that people have over this, they're doing it anyway. And Obama, you know, got up there in his, you know, State of the Union and says, oh, yeah, we've made some adjustments. Bull crap, they're lying. That's the frustration. You know, James Clapper, the head, you know, he gets up there a few months ago and they ask him a direct question. Are you collecting data and information on, millions or hundreds of millions of Americans. No, we're not.
Not intentionally.
He lied.
Not intentionally.
Yeah, he lied, and he got caught lying, and he still has a job. Now, if that doesn't tell you they have zero respect for you as a citizen, then I don't know what else to tell you. I'm wasting my freaking time doing this show. You know? And they never have proven once that anything that they've done with this mass system has kept America safer. And it doesn't. They know who the bad guys are. They know what countries they come from. They let them in this damn country. Our borders are wide open. You know, they give them visas. Now Obama's done some executive, you know, spin the pen on the phone, and people who have ties to terrorism are no longer on the watch list, and we can start letting them in this country. Are you freaking kidding me? And then they tell you out of that side of their mouth, then they come on the other side of their mouth and they tell you, well, terrorism, Al-Qaeda's growing and it's more powerful. Well, of course, they get our money. But that's another point. But, you know, they're more powerful and it's scary and we've got to keep you safe. Well, they don't close our borders. They let terrorists in. Now they let people in who are connected to terrorists, you know, and that's okay to bring in. And then they tell you they got a spy on you. Which is it? That's the frustration for me is, why don't people understand this? Why don't they get up and wake up and go, okay, I have no problem with you keeping me safe if what you're doing is legitimate, legal, constitutional, and is that's what it's designed and the application of it is for that. But if it's for all these other things, politics and power and control and you're lying about it, then it's wrong and it needs to be stopped.
It does need
people
to
need
stuff,
to wake the hell,
and
people need to wake the hell up.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you're right. People need to wake the hell up. That's the problem. If you're listening to this show, you're awake. You're already upset about this. The problem is that all you're doing is sharing the same Snowden articles and NSA articles and Greenwald articles back and forth to the same 12 people in the same 11 groups that already know about this stuff. There is a huge, vast number of people out there who've never heard of Edward Snowden, who don't know what NSA stands for, don't understand what a FISA court is, don't know anything about wiretapping, and they're on social media, they have phones, they use email, they're being spied on, they just don't know it. That's who you have to reach. This is not a partisan issue, but it is only real conservatives and genuine libertarians who are going to do anything about it. But you need massive numbers. I think Rand Paul has like 300,000 people already involved in this lawsuit.
Could be millions already.
It needs to be 3 million, 300 million because we're all victims of this. And it isn't an issue of, well, if the NSA is spying on us to keep us safe, that's okay. The government is not built to keep you safe. It is built to protect your rights. One of those is the common defense. But spying on every American without probable cause, without warrant, and without suspicion is not common defense. It's certainly not keeping you safe, but it is violating your rights, which is the chief purpose of government in the first place. That is not a partisan issue. That's an American issue. No, go ahead.
Yeah, keeping you safe is an illusion. You know what I mean? Anybody who's ever dealt with security, and I have, is if somebody really wants to get through and is willing to give their life up to do their thing, you can't stop them. You know, you have to – this goes back to – I mean, it's the whole Bill of Rights, Rex. It's the Second Amendment. It's the right to protect yourself, the right to bear arms, you know, the right to be able to pull a gun on a bad guy invading your home and putting them down and not be taken to court for it. You know what I'm saying? It's all this shit. That comes out of this liberal agenda that strips you of your rights, that makes you a victim, and then tells you they're going to protect you when it isn't about protecting you, when it's about controlling you. That's the frustrating part. You know, we just, this world, you know, we've been, it's just like the whole thing. For anybody who's ever studied history on Afghanistan, anybody thinks that we could have controlled Afghanistan, we have thrown a small percentage of what Russia threw at Afghanistan, and they had to pull out. And then we turn around, we do it again, and then we don't take care of the problem, and we didn't take care of the issues in Pakistan. We never solved the problem. We didn't solve it in Pakistan because they, you know, just basically gave them safe haven. and we were giving them billions of dollars, and that money was filtering to the bad guys, and that got them, you know, their ability to arm and recruit and, you know, these poverty-stricken areas, and then send them over the border and kill our guys and run back across the border. You know, and we never solved the problem. It's a trillion-dollar war. It's destroyed our economy. You got Iraq. It was a fairly stable area. We blew it all to hell. Spent $1 trillion, destroyed our economy, thousands of lives and disabled vets, and it's a frickin' hellhole. We just created a hotbed for the terrorism to explode. This problem, we're not fixing it, and we're not protecting, we're not truly doing the things that we need to do to protect our country. And it's going to boil down to, I hate thinking like this, but it's going to boil down to where it's going to be your ass on the line someday in your own freaking neighborhood because they're not doing their job, but they're spying on you. So what the hell for? That's that why question. You always come back to that why question again. You know, do your damn job, secure our border, and protect us from the bad guys, and leave me the hell alone, and quit screwing up the economy, and we will have a great country again. Does it get any more complicated than that?
No, it's not more complicated than that, and that's the problem. It's not more complicated than that, but a wealthy country that's prosperous, that's safe, that lifts people out of poverty, that allows human beings to flourish because they are at liberty to practice their religion, to protect their family, to raise their kids the way that they want, to keep what they earn, to run their businesses and work in their jobs, that creates a people that is difficult to control. And those that seek profit at the expense of others without working don't want that. The reason they keep the damn border open has nothing to do with being kind to Mexicans and other people who come across the border or those that are here illegally working hard and paying taxes. It has everything to do with keeping us unsafe. Because when you're unsafe and you're scared, you will run to the government to protect you, like your mother. That's what they want. They don't want to be the government that guarantees your rights that are yours from God. They want to be the government that gives you your rights the way a parent does. That's what they're looking for. And what you have to understand is your rights, and this is the only country in the history of the world to state that emphatically as our creed in the Declaration of Independence, which is the spirit of the law and the Constitution is the framework that says that all men are created equal as a self-evident truth, endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that amongst these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We state that emphatically, which means that your rights come from God and your rights cannot be taken away. They are unalienable. You can't even give them away yourself. But exercising your rights, that's a different issue. You can only exercise your rights when the government that we've instituted, which is accountable to us, guarantees those rights by protecting them from molestation and usurpation, not only from each other, but also from the government itself. That's the system that we have. What they have changed it into, and that's what this NSA spying is about, that's what the Star Chamber FISA courts are about, is about preventing you from having the ability to exercise those rights, because they can't take them away from you, so they just want to make sure that you can't exercise them. And the one that they're going to use ultimately is taking away your right to bear arms. Because if you're unarmed and the government has a monopoly on guns, you can't do anything.
Then you're a total victim. Yeah, you're a total victim at that point. Well, and this is – it's really interesting because you look at – I mean, I can go all the way back to the Civil War and come forward from there, but definitely since the Fed was enacted, because that gave – that economic control factor to the government. And then when Nixon kicked us off the last, the gold standard, then it really changed the dynamics of our economic system. Because I remember, you know, when I was growing up, we could have, you know, we had three kids, dad, mom, and he wasn't, you know, my dad was a new college professor. He wasn't making big money like they do now. And we did okay. And my mom didn't have to work, and she was highly educated, you know, dual master's degree. So, you know, it was a different world back then. And so when they screwed up the economics and the currency, I don't even, you know, it's not money anymore, but currency, and screwed it up and created this inflationary tax, You know, it just, it made everybody a slave to work. And then our whole system started crumbling around us, from our family unit, you know, to financial servitude. Everybody starts chasing, and it's really bizarre to me, Rex, but the concept of the American dream, you know, of financial stability and, you know, a home, you know, the idea of owning a home was actually owning the home, not being in debt for 30 freaking years. You know what I'm saying? It's just crazy. People buying cars on 5-year loans or leasing them forever for your whole life. You know, just the things that I see economically in our country today are part of that whole control factor, because if people are stressed out, financially broken, financially dependent, then all you're doing is running that treadmill all the time, and you don't have time to think, you know, live your life, love your family, to build, you know, those core values, to be healthy. You know, fast food becomes your way of life. I mean, your health goes to it. Everything spins out from that economic factor, which,
well,
you know, is the next topic.
Yeah, and the thing is that by inflating the money supply, devaluing the dollar, they're encouraging you to consume now before the dollar becomes worthless, or to borrow because, A, you can't afford the things that would otherwise be affordable if it wasn't being devalued on a regular basis. When they devalue the dollar, they inflate asset prices, which is why homes cost $1 million when they used to cost $35,000. It's why cars cost $40,000 when they used to cost $3,000. It's why you could live, okay, around the Imperial City, which was less imperial back then, in 1971, earning $11,000 a year and have a pretty good life where mom stayed home and took care of the kids, dad went to work, the family had a 2-week vacation, could afford the groceries and pay the bills and put money away for retirement and college. Now, in the greater Imperial City region, you need to pull down $200,000 to $250,000 to barely eke out the same lifestyle, because they've bid up the prices so much by devaluing the dollar since they decoupled it from gold 42 years ago, and the power of D.C. has grown so much that it's bid up all the prices in this area. And the thing is that around the Imperial City, it doesn't look like we're in a freaking devastating economy, because all the money is flowing here. It flows up and down the I-95 corridor between Manhattan and Washington, D.C. And the rest of the country is screwed, except for a couple of places where they got some oil business going. Okay? That's what happens. Remember that for all 70 years of the Soviet Empire, the party members in Moscow lived real well. That's how socialism works. That's how communism works. And that's what's happening now. And we're allowing it, because we don't get outraged by shit like what's going on with the NSA. And when someone like Rand steps up to take it on using every possible legal means he has at his disposal, what happens? We start ripping him apart. He's not libertarian enough. He's not like his dad. Rand Paul's a kooky pot-smoking libertarian. All this kind of crap. This man is doing unbelievably hard work behind enemy lines, being beat down by people in his own party, and he wants your criticism? You're supposed to stand with Rand, and you're supposed to help him fight, because he's fighting for you. And this isn't really about Rand Paul. This isn't about any one person. This is about the people who take their job seriously, who stand up and put everything they have on the line to defend the Constitution and defend liberty. And the other one that's doing that, Chris, is the junior senator from Texas, who hasn't even been in the Senate for a year yet. And he's caused all sorts of frickin' waves. Why? Because he said what he was going to do, and then he went there and he did it. And instead of being a quiet little junior senator freshman who just takes the cues from his boss, who happens to be, I believe, John Cornyn from Texas, get rid of that guy. There's a guy named Stovall. There's another one, Stockman, I think. I think Stovall seems to be the one being most active right now. Get rid of Cornyn, who is McConnell's little girlfriend. Kentucky, get rid of McConnell and send people like Rand back. And Ohio, get rid of Boehner. Because these are the sons of bitches that are the problem. Oh, no, Rex, Obama's the problem. Harry Reid's the problem. Nancy Pelosi's the problem. You're damn right they're the problem. But you see, they're doing what they were elected to do. Screw some people on behalf of others. That's what they said they were going to do, and that's what they're doing. But the Republicans were elected to put a stop to that, to give rule of law supremacy, to give the Constitution supremacy, to shrink the government. But they don't do that. And when some of them do, the others turn on them. And that's exactly what they did in the Senate, where Ted Cruz had to stand up and give a filibuster that you didn't hear about in order to prevent cloture on a vote that would wipe out the debt ceiling until March of next year, giving Obama unlimited borrowing power to put you in debt. Why did the Republicans not want Ted Cruz to filibuster? Why did they not want to force a cloture vote? Because a cloture vote requires 60 votes to shut it down, the filibuster, whereby just passing the bill requires a simple majority. Harry Reid has a simple majority. None of the Republicans wanted to be on record voting in favor of wiping out the debt ceiling. Not that they had a problem with it. They just didn't want to be on record doing it in an election year. Senator Ted Cruz forced them to do that, and they hate him for it. Why is he disrupting things? The thing went through anyway. It was a pointless fight. No, it wasn't. Because after all the hemming and hawing and 45 minutes of wrangling, he forced Mitch McConnell and John Cornyn to go register their vote to close debate on the bill so that Harry Reid could give Obama unlimited borrowing power. Harry Reid couldn't do it without those Republicans like John McCain and Barbara McCloskey and all those other insipid bastard rhinos. I got a clip, 12 minutes, if you want to hear that, unless you want to comment on that.
No, I the only thing I wanted to say was there was a good article that said that McCain ran up to the person who calls out the votes and shut them down so they wouldn't call it out. So C-SPAN wouldn't get that, you know, the verbal traitor move by those Republicans that did the cloture vote. And it's just amazing to me. I love it. Expose them. You know what I'm saying? Just expose them, and keep exposing them because they're embedded power structures. They've been in, you know, some of these guys have been in there 20, 30 years. Get rid of them. You know, go join the Democrat Party. I don't care. You know, I made a comment on a post earlier tonight. Somebody was talking about, you know, Mitt, because he's getting in the news again, which means he's getting ready to do something. I don't know what he's getting ready to do. You know, back rhinos, back Bush, who knows? But he's getting a lot of airtime. He did that documentary, blah, blah, blah. And somebody was saying, oh, leave Mitt alone. And I'm saying, I'll leave him alone fine when he goes and joins the damn Democrat Party where he belongs. Get the hell out of this party. He's not a Republican by any way or mean based on the Republican Party platform. And I don't know, maybe it's like the Constitution. Maybe more people just need to read the platform. Because if they stood on that platform, I wouldn't have a problem with this party. But the problem is they don't stand on that platform. What the hell do we work our asses off in this party for and build a platform if they're not going to stand on it? Now, I don't think that Rand and Lee and Cruz and Gowdy and the rest of them that are making all the waves, I don't think they're that unique or extraordinary at all. I just think that they're standing on the damn party platform. You know what? Why in the hell do you have a platform if you're not going to stand on it? You know,
they get the idiot grassroots to vote for your rhinos. That's why.
Well, yeah.
Seriously,
but
that's why they have it.
It was a rhetorical question. But
I know.
But when you look at Congress at a 10% approval rating, you know, they're worthless. They're destroying our country. They're destroying our economy. They're not making our country any safer. Our border's wide open. Our economy is toast. They've run off business to other countries, you know, with all these ridiculous regulations and taxation. And I'm not talking about just Obama. I'm talking about Republicans, too. A lot of these departments that are destroying our country, you know, EPA, Nixon. You know, Endangered Species Act, Nixon. You know, you don't like Agenda 21, and you don't like the fact that some stupid gopher destroys your farming industry in your rural area like my county. You know, blame Nixon because he started it. So, you know, Republicans do it too. And that's the problem. Either states have their rights and sane people that you can actually connect to make the laws and we work together as a system like we're supposed to work together, or you have a communist-controlled federal government. And there is no difference between what we are becoming and what the USSR was. The only difference was the USSR owned all the industry of trade. Well, stick around, because they're working on that too. Go ahead. Play your clip.
Yeah, well, that's the nature of corporatism, whether it comes under the guise of free market capitalism or Soviet-style communism or Chinese-style state capitalism or whatever. It doesn't matter. What it is the wealthy, uber-wealthy. I'm not talking about 1%. I'm talking about 0.00001%.
Yep.
Uber-wealthy, mostly capitalists, as in bankers, not entrepreneurs who run businesses and divert capital to its highest and best use, but those that own the capital end up owning the private corporations
like
for private profits, like Romney, and then what they do is they socialize the losses by taking excessive risks and forcing you to pay for it. That's what's going on.
Bingo.
And the problem is that it's so complicated and confusing because of the way that the economics is taught to us in school and on the TV and on the stock charts and all that crap, is that most people don't understand it. So they might be pissed off at certain corporations, so they hate all corporations. Well, some of them are actually competing in the free market. They just hate all of them. And what is their solution? More government. That's the problem. The government is what secured the profits for these people. They can't compete in the marketplace, so they use the government to rape you. That's their game. And Ted Cruz is standing up and fighting for it. Okay. And if you don't tell people that's what's going on, what happens? He gets marginalized and beat up in the news, including, quote, Farron Bell's Fox News. And what happens? People who would otherwise vote for constitutionalists, libertarians, conservatives will end up voting for the rhinos because they think that these people are the problem, people like Ted Cruz and Rand Paul. That's what's going on. You really need to explain this. Now, here's what's going to happen. We've got about 17 minutes of live air left. There's a whole bunch of you listening. At 11 p.m. Eastern, if you're listening live in your browser, you're going to lose the feed. If you're listening in podcast, just keep rolling. We're probably going to go about 45 minutes into overtime, so close to midnight. If you want to listen live, you have to call in and listen on your phone. The call-in number is 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. Don't worry about being on the air. I'm not going to take any calls. We don't have time. Here is about 12 minutes explaining the Ted Cruz filibuster that you never heard about.
We've got a debt ceiling showdown once again looming here. Is that going to be another opportunity for you and for other Republicans to wage their fights over some of these economic policies of the administration, another opportunity to fight over Obamacare?
Well, if you get outside of Washington and you talk to any Americans, the answer is obvious. Of course, we shouldn't just raise the debt ceiling without making structural reforms to stop the out-of-control spending in Washington. When President Obama was elected, the national debt was $10 trillion. Today, it's over $17 trillion. It's now larger than the size of our entire economy. And what the president's saying is he wants a blank check. He wants to just keep borrowing and borrowing. And you know, it's important, Peter, to emphasize something, because we know how this will play out. The strategy that the president is going to try is he's going to try to scaremonger, and in particular, he's going to try to scare the markets and suggest a default on the debt unless he gets a blank check to keep borrowing and borrowing and borrowing. Now, mind you, his borrowing so far has resulted in the credit of the United States being downgraded. But the simplest answer to that, I am a strong proponent of a bill Pat Toomey has introduced that I call the Default Prevention Bill. It is a bill that says under no circumstances will the United States ever, ever, ever default on its debt. Regardless of what happens with the debt ceiling, we will always honor our commitments and pay our debt. The reason it hasn't passed is President Obama, Harry Reid, and the Democrats are blocking it because they want to scaremonger.
It obviously raises the debt ceiling, allows the government to pay its bills through March of next year. Senator Ted Cruz threatened the filibuster, failed in his attempt to do that. But I just wanted to ask you this because a vote, you know, the other way could hurt the GOP. The latest poll we have on the debt ceiling right now, if the debt ceiling was not raised, in terms of who you would blame, 54% of Americans said they blame the GOP on Capitol Hill. Only 29% would blame the president, and they want the debt ceiling to go up. Obviously, you know, you took a stand on this. Are you worried that voting against this issue could hurt your standing, your political future?
I never really think about things in terms of my political future. I just think about what's best for the country. And I would dispute your poll numbers. I would say the overwhelming majority, I think it's probably a 70 to 80% number, think that we cannot keep borrowing money without having some spending restraint. Mm-hmm. So if you word it, you know, polls all on how you word the questions. But if you ask people, should we continue to borrow money without any budgetary restraint or without any budgetary caps or without trying to balance the budget, I think they would say, no, it's inexcusable, it's unsustainable. So we've got real problems as a country, and we can have all these sort of short-term battles between Republicans and Democrats, but we're borrowing over $1 million a minute. It's costing a million jobs a year, and it's unsustainable.
The hit for, you were quoted as saying, we are not going to threaten default again by attaching conditions, but you said you don't think there's any chance that a clean, without any condition, debt bill could get through the Senate. So which is it?
Well, those statements are not inconsistent. I mean, some of the most significant legislation passed in the last 50 years have been in conjunction with a debt ceiling, the Congressional Review Act. The Clinton Republican Congress deficit reduction package in the late 90s that led to 3 years in a row of balanced budgets. The Budget Control Act we just did in 2011. I think for the president to ask for a clean debt ceiling when we have a debt the size of our economy is irresponsible. So we ought to discuss adding something to his request to raise the debt ceiling that does something about the debt, or it produces at least something positive for our country.
But you just heard Dan Pfeiffer say the president is where he is, and he's not going to bargain. He's not going to put something on the debt limit. The fact is, and, you know, they talk about the definition of insanity as doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. When you get in these crises, whether it's a government shutdown or a possible default, the public tends to side with the president. At a time when the president's numbers are low, when you've got Obamacare creating a lot of concerns about this president, you really want to get in a fight over the debt limit?
What we want to do is try to accomplish something for the country. And I think the president's, any president's request to raise the debt ceiling, whether this one or previous presidents, is a good opportunity to try to do something about the debt. And I think the president is taking an unreasonable position to suggest that we ought to treat his request to raise the debt ceiling like some kind of motherhood resolution that everybody just says aye and we don't do anything when we have this stagnant economy and this massive debt created under his administration.
So are you saying right here we are going to attach something to the debt ceiling, and if so, what?
What I'm saying is we ought to attach something significant for the country to his request to increase the debt ceiling. It's been the pattern for 50 years, going back to the Eisenhower administration. I think it's the responsible thing to do for the country, and I think he's the one being irresponsible by saying, oh, just raise the debt ceiling. We're not going to do anything about the debt or anything else that's important to the country.
Any specific idea?
Keystone Pipeline, a good example of something that would create jobs for the American people. The House of Representatives will initiate the discussion on the debt ceiling increase. They probably will have other ideas.
How about banning any bailout, this affecting the risk corridors on Obamacare?
All of those would be important steps in the right direction. We need not have a default. We're never going to default. The Speaker and I have made that clear. We've never done that. But it's irresponsible not to use the discussion, the request of the president to raise the debt ceiling,
never,
to try to
accomplish been shy about not really caring if he's the skunk at the Senate Republican Garden Party, if it means standing up for conservative principles. That was clear when he pushed a strategy that led to the government shutdown in the fall, and was clear again today when he filibustered raising the debt ceiling, knowing it would put a lot of his colleagues in political danger.
This vote was never going to be easy, but this was high drama. For 45 minutes, the Senate was in limbo, two votes short of the 60 needed to overcome a filibuster waged by Republican Ted Cruz on raising the debt ceiling. Thanks to Cruz's tactic, what Republicans feared most, putting the nation's credit and American stock portfolios at risk, was about to happen. Then suddenly, the Senate's top two Republicans walked the political plank together. Senate GOP leader Mitch McConnell and his number two, John Cornyn, approached the desk to vote yes. Both McConnell and Cornyn are facing primary challenges from the right. Both knew full well voting to allow more borrowing to pay the country's debt would give ammunition to their conservative opponents, but they did it anyway. That was the 60 votes needed to break Cruz's filibuster, but Republicans decided they needed more. The search began for other GOP colleagues to switch their votes to yes to give their Senate leaders political cover. Finally, Susan Collins emerged from the GOP cloakroom with a group of Republicans who agreed to vote yes. John McCain, Orrin Hatch, and others taking one for the team, helping to pad the margin and share responsibility.
The votes on the motion are 67 in favor, 31 against.
Quickly followed by final passage on a party line vote, something most Republicans wanted in the first place, without the drama of Cruz's filibuster.
On this vote, the ayes are 55, the nays are 43.
55 Democrats voting yes, all Republicans voting no.
Republican leadership sources I speak to underscore that their goal all along was to save Republicans from a losing fight that could hurt the economy so much it could jeopardize Republicans' chances to take the Senate and even possibly to keep the House. But Cruz, as you know, has always positioned himself as somebody who is the keeper of conservative principles. He issued a blistering statement after this vote saying that leaders in the Senate are more willing to mortgage their children's future because they want praise from the Washington.
And I'm wondering now, with this debt ceiling deadline fast approaching, do you think, whether it's your measure or other measures, should be attached to any measure that raises that debt ceiling?
In my view, we should not raise the debt ceiling without fundamental structural reforms to stop the out-of-control spending.
But that never happened, Senator.
Well, actually, with respect, Neil, it has happened. The last 55 times the debt ceiling's been raised, 28 of them, Congress put significant restrictions, and some of the most successful structural reforms limiting spending have come through the debt ceiling.
No, I didn't mean to quibble with that. I just meant that our debt has only gotten bigger, and our problems have only gotten more, you know, entrenched.
Yeah, no doubt, and the problem has been exacerbated in recent years.
Yeah.
5 years ago when Obama was elected, the national debt was $10 trillion. Now it's over $17 trillion, and it's larger than the size of our economy, and I think it's fundamentally irresponsible, and yet Washington, President Obama, and the Democrats, they don't want to do anything at all to address the structural problems in our spending.
Do you think that they think it's even a problem? I know you part company sometimes with the fiery words your own father uses, but Rafael Cruz told a group of Tea Parties recently, referring to the President Center, that he acts no different than that bearded guy left behind in Cuba. Do you agree with that?
Well, actually, the comment he made there was in reference in particular to the president's abuse of power and acting unilaterally.
Right,
what my father was talking about is the president said to Congress, right, if Congress doesn't act, I will. And my dad's point is, listen, our Constitution is meant to constrain how government power can be used, and this president, we've seen a pattern of lawlessness that undermines the checks in the Constitution and is fundamentally a threat to liberty.
Well,
and
let me
that
ask
is
you,
exactly
if you become president and you poll very well in a small group who are mentioned as possible presidential prospects, and you were dealing, let's say, with a Democratic Congress, Senator, would you do the same thing that Barack Obama is doing, that you throw up your hands, it's so impossible to get past these guys that I'm going to take some executive orders into action of my own accord and the hell with it?
Absolutely not. Every president takes an oath to the Constitution. Now, to be clear, Neil, there are legitimate areas for executive orders. Executive orders can bind the executive administration. Article 2 of the Constitution gives the president the authority to lead the executive. But what President Obama has done that is unprecedented is when he disagrees with the law, he refuses to enforce it. With Obamacare, he granted a waiver to big business despite the fact that the text of the statute prohibits it. He granted a waiver to Congress despite the fact that the text of the statute prohibits it. And most strikingly, when over 5 million Americans lost their health insurance because of Obamacare, he didn't do what every other president would have done, which is go to Congress, say, hey, this law isn't working, it's hurting millions of Americans, let's change it. Instead, he just held a press conference where he instructed private insurance companies, issue policies that are illegal under the law, I'm telling you to violate the law. That's really dangerous, and Neil, that ought to trouble everybody, not just Republicans, but Democrats, Independents, Libertarians, because when a president can pick and choose which laws to follow and which laws to ignore, then he's no longer a president.
Ted Cruz, thank you very much. Good seeing you again.
Thank you, Neil.
He's getting to be a very powerful force in the Republican Party. Ted Cruz.
At my signal, unleash hell.
A pattern of lawlessness. That's where we started the show 2 hours ago, and that's exactly what Ted Cruz just said. A pattern of lawlessness, talking about Obama. But it's a pattern of lawlessness enabled by rhinos like Cornyn and McConnell. We've got about 4 minutes live left. If you want to continue to listen live, 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. I won't be able to bring anybody on, but you can listen in your phone. The browser is about to cut you off. If you're an archive, just keep rolling. And remember, all of our shows are available to you anytime in your browser. Just go to blogtalkradio.com, search out Liberty Thunder, go to our page, scroll down. Every show we've ever broadcast is right there. You click the link, it plays in your browser. If you go below the scrolling graphics, you can download an MP3 of the show. And please, thank you for sharing it. Keep sharing it. You can share the shows even after we've aired them. Most people listen after we've gone live. Get this information out there, and most especially, get it to those people who are unaware of this stuff, the people that are conservatives and libertarians and independents who get their news from places like Fox News and most of the mainstream media where they're not told this stuff in detail, even though that clip you just heard, the last part of it was Neil Cavuto on Fox News. They tend to have these guys on, interview them, and then once the Ted Cruz or Rand Paul or Trey Gowdy is off, they bring in a panel of neocons to rip them to shreds. You got to really get people to understand this stuff. Now, you also heard in there Mitch McConnell, the allegedly conservative senior senator from Kentucky and leader of the Republican minority in the Senate, say in that clip that he didn't want to pass the debt ceiling without getting some kind of concession. And he talked about, Keystone Pipeline and the insurance risk corridors or some crap like that. Notice that Ted Cruz said he was looking for structural reform in spending. McConnell didn't even address that. But guess what? McConnell was lying his ass off because he's being primaried by Matt Bevin in Kentucky. Because what McConnell did and what he was forced to do because Ted Cruz filibustered this disaster, he exacted nothing from Reid and Obama and gave Obama unlimited borrowing power from now until March 15th over and against the junior senator from Texas who was standing up there filibustering for you. And what you have to do, this year, 2014, it happens in November, but you got to get your ass on it right now. Oust Cornyn, oust McConnell. They're both up for re-election. And make Rand Paul and Ted Cruz the senior senators from Kentucky and Texas. That's what you have to do. Now, if you're not from Texas or from Kentucky, you can still donate money. You can donate time. You can make calls. You can get people aware. But you got to get rid of these guys, okay? And then the whole thing about, if we didn't raise the debt ceiling, well, they didn't raise the debt ceiling. They erased the debt ceiling. But if we didn't raise the debt ceiling, we would default on our bills and everything would crash. That's just bullshit fear-mongering, okay? It's not true. There's enough tax revenue coming in under the current system, as bad as it is, to pay all of our bills every month, including the interest on the debt and Medicare and Social Security, without borrowing another penny. But if you're going to raise the debt ceiling, you've got to get some structural cuts in spending. It cannot go on like this. The whole thing is going to collapse. They're only delaying it and making it worse. So don't fall for the fear that if we don't raise the debt ceiling, the world's going to collapse. It's going to collapse at some point anyway. The sooner we start doing the right things, the less painful it will be, and the better we can get it done. And while you're at it, Ohio, shit can Johnny Boehner. Make Trey Gowdy the Speaker of the House. Chris, this is insanity. Chris?
Yeah, I was on mute. Sorry. I'm cooking dinner, man. I didn't want you to hear me clanging pots and pans. Hey, I listened to that clip, and of course I listened to him before the show, and then you listen to him again. You listen to him individually, but it takes a while for it really to sink in. But that one female reporter, or whatever they call themselves, talking head, was talking about, you know, the faith and credit. Yeah, the faith and credit and the stock market and all this bull crap. That's the problem. The problem is misinformation. The problem isn't what Cruz and Rand and Gowdy and the rest of them are doing. And in reality, one of the best conversations on this whole thing was McConnell in front of Chris, you know, saying that this is, you know, for the last 50 years, every time we raise the debt ceiling, there's concessions. And he sat there and he put it out there, you know, that this is the normal way that Congress and presidents work. You go back and you listen to Newt Gingrich when he was Speaker of the House. He got an extremely leftist president, you know, to come to the middle and work on concessions and cut government, welfare reform, you know, balanced budgets, you know, not perfect balanced budget, but, you know, baseline balanced budgets. And they got stuff done because he knew how to use the powers of the House and the purse strings. And the thing is, these Republicans, they do nothing. And then they run up to a crisis, and then they fold. Now, they've been doing this now since 2010, since we gave them back the House and pulled the supermajority from the Senate away. And this is what's important is that, and you won't hear this on the news, even Fox, because they repeat the same stupid crap. It's not true what they're saying, what you said a minute ago. We have money. There's tax revenues coming in, you know, bills to be paid. I mean, Rex, what is the annual budget? $3.6 trillion? What was it 8 years ago? $1 point something trillion? I mean, this president is spending money, trillions of dollars, over anything that we've ever spent before, even with wars going on. You know, full wars, not this stuff he's doing. You know, killing people with drones, villagers at their weddings and stuff. But that's the thing that's frustrating, is that the data gets washed over. Some of what they're saying is kind of true, but a lot of it's not, but nobody counters it. And I think that's what you and I try to do is, you know, if you're going to say that, well, then let's talk about the full conversation behind that point. And what is the real truth behind the full faith and credit? The reason that everybody's folding on this debt ceiling is, number one, nobody wants to deal with waste and fraud, which is about $200 billion a year. Nobody wants to deal with disability fraud, you know, which has just exploded under this president and this bad economy because people, you know, they can't get work. And so nothing's getting fixed. Nothing's getting repaired. Nobody's working on waste and fraud or any kind of reform. They dangle this fear-mongering crap in front of you, you know, that, oh, my God, the full faith and credit of the American government, we can't pay our bills. It's bull crap. And then they scare the hell out of everybody, and then they target people like Ted Cruz, who's actually one of the few people telling the truth. That's the frustrating part of it, because we used to be a country where, you know, you present both sides of the story and let people decide. Now it's just a total marketing scam to make you into some scared, fearful sheep so they can just keep screwing you. Here's the thing that people don't talk about, because very few people get into advanced economics in the news, Fox, any of them. A few guys try to go there. Cavuto, he tries to do a pretty good job. He'll get people on there that, you know, are willing to tell the truth and give them a platform. But a lot of these debt bonds, because there's about $12 trillion floating around the world in both debt and trade dollars. And a lot of it, like China and Japan, we've never had this percentage of debt owned by outside countries before. It's the highest it's ever been. And that's because we've exhausted it inside the country. I mean, look at it now. Nobody's buying our bonds because they're worthless, you know, and they're devaluing it. Every time they print a dollar, it devalues it again and again and again. It doesn't pay anything. Well, they oversold, printed, and sold in this country. Then they went, you know, Japan, China, other countries. They bought up our debt. And now they're going like, I don't want your worthless debt. You guys won't fix your economics. You're screwing the dollar up. You're devaluing, monetizing everything. And so that means that, you know, this $1 trillion I have is really going to be worth $500 million by the time you idiots are done. So why in the hell would I keep buying your debt? A lot of countries bought our debt because they were scared and they were so tied to our dollar. But here's the thing that nobody talks about. A lot of those bonds are coming due because, you know, we're talking about a five-year cycle this crap's been going on. We got short-term and long-term bonds. Well, when they come due, that means that, let's say, China has $1.4 trillion, and they short sell it and say, I don't want to reinvest it. That's all of a sudden $1.4 trillion you got to come up with. You know, usually what happens with bonds is people, if everything's going good and money's going good, they might cash some of them out, but they'll reinvest a lot of them. So, you know, you might have, let's say you got $1.4 trillion, and you go, well, you know, I could use, you know, $400 billion. I want to do something else with it, but I'll go ahead and roll that trillion over. Well, that's only $400 billion you got to come up with. But we got trillions of dollars of this crap floating around out there. Everybody's freaking out over the U.S. dollar. They're going to want their money back.
Imagine that.
Well, that's, yeah, and nobody talks about this. So when they talk about full faith and credit of the United States, there is none. You know what I mean? That's the frustrating part. It was gone years ago when this guy started printed his first $800 billion on a shovel-ready job bullcrap, paying off his buddies, you know, his liberal buddies, to vote for Obamacare. That's all that was a payoff.
You know,
I think, what was it, $40,000 per job or some kind of crazy figure like that I heard. I can't remember. That was years ago.
It's
but
a
we've
scam.
Had five,
it's a scam.
We've had 5 years of this compounding on top of each, on top of it, on top of it, on top of it. And QE1, 2, and 3 and QE Infinity, they're still printing every month, you know, another $1 trillion a year. What it meant when they said unlimited debt ceiling until March 2015, that's probably
yeah.
just equate that to another $3 trillion in debt.
Oh, yeah.
And no reforms, no changes, more regulations because they want to shut down every stream and every breath of air you take in this country. That's what that means, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I may be wrong.
Well, no, it's not just a matter of your opinion. That's exactly what they're doing. They have to give him unlimited borrowing power because that's the only way that they can float this thing is with more debt. Now, one thing to keep in mind is giving him the unlimited borrowing power because he's spending too much money. Well, I mean, he is, but he's not the only one spending too much money because the revenue bills originate and the spending bills originate in the House. This is Paul Ryan's budget that Obama is pissing away, and that's why they had to give him unlimited borrowing power. Paul Ryan, mini Mitt Romney, Mr. Conservative, right? Mr. Impassioned Speech for TARP Bailouts. This is the scam that they are putting on you. You know, Paul Ryan read Ayn Rand and got a career in government because he was so inspired by her individualism. Paul Ryan, who's loved by the Tea Party because he's such a solid conservative number cruncher and he's going to balance the budget. That's the scam. This is Paul Ryan's budget that Obama is pissing away. And this is McConnell's limitless debt that Obama is borrowing. So does Obama suck? You bet your ass. Pelosi and Reid? Absolutely. But who are the real problems? The real problems are the sons of bitches who said that they would do something about it, who have the tools to do something about it, and choose not to. And not only do they choose not to, but when in their own ranks someone stands up to actually do something about this, they turn on them with more venom, with more vigor, with more money and more pressure than they ever level against the Democrats. It's the same way that Mitt Romney and Karl Rove took out Ron Paul and Newt Gingrich in the primaries and then put on pussy kid gloves when they went up against Obama. This is the – and the thing is that people still fall for it, and it is up to grassroots conservatives and libertarians and independents to get the masses aware of the propaganda game. Don't fight with each other about whether we should legalize pot or not, or whether there should be gay marriage or not, or whether we should be more libertarian or more conservative. That's not the point. You have more in common than you have difference. But we have way more difference with the other side, the statists, the collectivists, in both parties. You have to unite and dislodge them. Get rid of Cornyn, McConnell, Cantor, Boehner, Ryan, Jihad Jane McCammad, Lindsay Lightness Loafers, Gramnesty, Bob Bailout Corker, and all the other assholes, and put in people like Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and Mike Lee and Trey Gowdy and Louis Gohmert. That's what you have to do, and this is the year to do it. People smell something is wrong, but they don't quite know what it is. You have to educate them. It's February. You have to do it now if you want them to get it right in November. Chris, we're in overtime. We're going to run out of time. So you've got, 5-10 minute close. So I'm going to give you final thoughts.
Well, and you're right on. And but of course, you know that. But the thing I remember so much was the Tea Party movement. It was so powerful. People were so excited. They stood up, they moved, they rocked and rolled, and they made a big difference. Here's the challenge is, and I really believe this, and I've said it before, and I'll say it again. The problem with the Tea Parties is they went, oh, look what we did. We won. Okay, we can set back now. Everything will be fine. You know, we made this big movement. That was the problem. And the other problem is they thought the Republicans would treat them right for handing them victory. Well, here's the problem. The Republican Party is ruled by, you know, the old Rockefeller wing, which are basically Democrats that co-opted the party years and years and years ago. You know, the Republican Party is not the party of Reagan. Reagan was an anomaly. It was a movement. You know, after Reagan left, you know, they started turning back to Rockefeller Republicans. Newt came along, and he moved it back the other way, and they couldn't handle that, so they beat on him until they ran him out of power. You know, see, that's a challenge, and sometimes people don't – I don't think people understand that. What are these Republicans? You know, who are these people? And I – my favorite saying is, and I say this all the time, is oust all Bush-era rhinos. If you want to save your country, it's that simple. Yes, it's a given. You know, you want to defeat Democrats where you can. That's all wonderful. But the bottom line is the only thing that we can empower and change is who represents us. We can't, you know, you can't either defeat a Democrat or you don't. Once they're in power, that's what they are. They're Democrats. But you have to get people out of this party who have the ability to win, out of this party, and get people in there that give a crap about the party platform. It's that simple. And I don't know why we can have all these discussions at a national level and nobody will hold up the party platform in front of these guys when they do this crap, when they fold or they attack, you know, somebody who's standing on the principles like Rand or Cruz or whoever, and hold up that party platform and say, do you believe in this? Yes, I do. I'm a Republican. Okay, then why in the hell don't you follow it? And why in the hell are you attacking the guy that is following it? In other words, do you really believe in it, or is that what you did to get elected? It's really that simple. Doesn't get any more complicated than that. And that's the challenge with politics, is you forget that principles matter. I mean, you look at Obama, you can say all kinds of things about him all day long, but he's following his principles, baby. He's Mr. Hope and Change and knocked America down a few notches. And, you know, I mean, he's doing his thing, and that's fine. That's what he said he was going to do. That's what he's doing. The question is why are so-called Republicans helping him with that agenda? That's the problem, not Obama. That's my input.
Rock on. Absolutely. All right, I'm going to do my final thoughts, and then we're going to close out with a little bit of Rand Paul talking about George Orwell's 1984. Is it fact or is it fiction? And remember, Chris and I will be back live at our new time, 9 p.m. Eastern, this Thursday. And on Thursdays, the lines will be open around about the second hour. So make sure you get on board and call in and speak about the topic and conservative grassroots and how libertarians and conservatives can get along and stop the rising tide of collectivism. That's this Thursday, 9 p.m., and, of course, we'll be back Sunday. I have no idea what we're going to be talking about, but I'm sure they're going to give us a lot of crap between now and then to address. We talked about Rand Paul's lawsuit against Obama over the NSA wiretapping program. All the information is in Chris's group. That's Liberty's Talk on Facebook. Get in there. And also all the links and clips that we use are in the comments section under the post of this show on our Facebook page, Liberty's Thunder on Facebook, and also in our militia. I have posted every clip, every article we've used for the show tonight for your reference afterwards. Keep sharing the shows. Remember, after we air, they are available on Blog Talk Radio. Just go to blogtalkradio.com, search out Liberty's Thunder. All the shows are there. Get this information out to people. You don't have to agree with everything we say. You don't have to agree with our style. You don't have to agree with my ranting. You don't have to like Chris's club. The point is that hardly anybody is talking about this stuff in the context in which we're talking about it. Grassroots conservatives and libertarians who have so much more in common than they have different, working together to bring the Constitution back and roll back the state before we have an economic collapse and a police state and we whimper and wither away into the ash heap of history. But this is the year where you have the opportunity to show the stark differences between the founders' vision for this country and the statists' vision for this country. This is the year you can get people activated and awake and start rolling it back. It took us over 100 years to get here. We ain't going to fix it in one election cycle. We're not going to fix it in one presidential term. But if you don't start now, we may never, ever have the opportunity again. Stand proud as an inheritor of liberty and pass it on to your progeny. Couple of quick things. Rule of law. I mean, that's really what we're talking about. Rand Paul's lawsuit, Ted's filibuster over the raising. Elimination of the debt ceiling, the lawlessness of the executive orders and the changing of the laws. Rule of law is what makes liberty possible. I know some ANCAPs and anarchists think the rule of law can happen, liberty can happen without law. It cannot. It is not proper anthropology. That is not the way human beings work. Someone will stand up and be the strong man and create another state. There will always be a state. The issue is the rule of law, where we are all equal before the law. And it's not arbitrary, and that's the problem with what's going on now, and that's precisely why we inherited a tradition of liberty through Christendom and Western civilization, which is Judeo-Christian philosophy, Hellenistic philosophy, and Roman law, and specifically through British common law, where we had the Magna Carta, and unfortunately we also had the Star Chamber, and that's what we're looking at. And what you need to do is forget about the cult of personality and find men of honor who will fulfill the duties of their job. Look at General George Washington, whose birthday we celebrate tomorrow. This man could have been king. He could have been dictator. He could have been His Majesty. This is the guy that won the war on behalf of the colonists to secede from Britain. They made him the first president. He stepped down after his second term and went back to his farm, just like Cincinnatus in Rome. Those are the kind of men that you need to elect to these positions, because it's not about the man. It's about the Constitution, and it's about the law. Rule of law only works when rules are promulgated and are clear and coherent with respect to each other. That's not Obamacare. That's not the tax code. That's not Medicare. That's not Social Security. That's not eminent domain. All of these things are not clear. Rules are promulgated and are clear and coherent with respect to each other. Rules are prospective rather than retroactive and not impossible to comply with. You can't make shit up after the fact. You cannot force insurance companies to do X, and then when you realize it's a bad political move, tell them, well, now you have to do Y. It doesn't work that way. Rules are sufficiently stable to allow people to be guided by their knowledge of the content of the rules. 55,000 pages of tax code is impossible to comply with. 20,000 pages of regs over Obamacare is impossible to comply with. those charged with the authority to make and administer rules are accountable for their own compliance with the rules and administer the law consistently. That means that congressmen and senators and presidents and everybody else in government has to be under the same rules as the rest of us. Otherwise, they are our masters and not merely administrators of government. And that is exactly what's going on now. Rules apply to everybody equally. That is a very important thing. And the law is applied consistently in compliance with the Constitution. No secret courts, no drone execution of American citizens without due process that are not engaged in immediate combat against these United States. And that's what they're contemplating doing now, and that's the filibuster that Rand Paul had to give last March for 13 hours to bring attention to. Don't let that wither away. Stand with Rand. There is a recognized division of responsibility in administering the law. No one can, for example, be simultaneously judge, witness, public prosecutor, and public defender. Well, it seems that the imperial president thinks he can be all of that and more. And it seems that the rhino squishes, who are supposed to prevent him from doing that, want to give him all that friggin' power so that you'll be pissed off, and then you will elect them, and then they'll do the same friggin' thing to you. Wake the people up. This is wrong. You know, François Guizot said, in passing from despotism to liberty, nations cease to have masters, but they are not replaced by servants. They then have leaders in whose hands authority is not demeaning and who, in accepting the necessity to act for the common good, remain heads of state. There will always be government. There will always be somebody in charge. You have a choice. You can either have this thing fall apart, and whenever there's chaos, some strong man arises or some group arises that will promise to restore order at the expense of liberty. And that's what they'll do to you. Anarchy never lasts. It is only a way station towards tyranny. If you don't roll this thing back now, that's where we're going. And it'll be horrible for the whole planet, not just America. But this is where we live. This is our country. We are responsible for the liberty here. You are responsible for the liberty here. And I don't want to hear you bitching about Democrats and Obama and Reid and libertarians and conservatives and neocons and blah. Find people who believe in freedom and the responsibility that comes with it, who love the Constitution and the rule of law. Band together to restore the law. Because without that, we can't have liberty. And without liberty, we cannot even discuss where our differences are, because we will all have a boot on our neck. We will all be robbed through inflation. We will all be taxed beyond belief. And our funds will be taken to blow up and subjugate the rest of the world, because the Federal Reserve note has absolutely nothing backing it other than the might of the U.S. military. And those young men and women are dying overseas not to fight for your liberty, but to secure the power of the oligarchs in Saudi Arabia, in Tel Aviv, and in New York. That's not freedom. Bring them home. Restore the Constitution. Do it. Do it now, before it's too late. We can win this year. Proud to stand with you. Spread the show. Stand for liberty. This is Rex and Trog signing off.
May the thunder of liberty rumble on.
Prosecution has stated this piece of evidence is crucial to their case. Whether that is true or not, my basis for ruling cannot be guided by that criteria. My criteria is, and always will be, the Constitution and the laws of the state of California. If, in fact, this single piece of evidence is that crucial, then it is the responsibility of the prosecution to make doubly sure that it conforms to the laws and precedents. Laws and precedents the prosecution is quite familiar with. My responsibility is to ensure a fair trial for the accused. If I knowingly allowed a procedural defect or a violation of the law to pass before me, I would not be fulfilling those responsibilities. I would be equally derelict if I simply allowed something like this to pass and forced the appellate court to overturn a conviction that was based on that evidence or procedure. I believe that the search in question would be found by any appellate court to be without probable cause. And as a result, as painful...
The Ministry of Peace concerns itself with war. The Ministry of Truth with lies. The Ministry of Love with torture. And the Ministry of Plenty with starvation. These contradictions are not accidental, nor do they result from ordinary hypocrisy. They are the deliberate exercises in doublethink. Just Orwellian fiction, right? It could never happen in America. Decide for yourself. The Patriot Act concerns itself with the most unpatriotic of acts, allowing searches and seizures without judicial warrant. Many modern legislative enterprises engage in doublespeak. Often, in fact, the more jingoistic and Pollyanna the title, the more likely that basic rights and principles of free men are under assault. Instead of patriotic rejection of tyranny, we are asked to know your neighbor in order to report upon your neighbor. Your local bank is commanded to report suspicious activities to the feds. In the past decade, over 8 million suspicious activities reports have been filed. National security letters, basically warrants without judicial review, have been used to snoop on hundreds of thousands of Americans. Daily, millions of travelers are subject to invasive searches without probable cause. In the name of patriotism, Americans' emails and phone calls are monitored. Not just communications deemed of probable cause by an independent judiciary, but gazillions of communications. The number can't be revealed because it's a state secret. But the number is beyond normal cognition and beyond normal computational prowess. A gazillion is not an overstatement. When Winston renounced Julia, I cried. Okay, well, not the first time I read 1984, but the second time, 30 years later. Real men don't cry, or so they say, but when Winston finally renounces Julia, I cried. The point at which we renounce what we love is a point when grown men should cry. The first time I read 1984, I was profoundly sad the entire read, but I was a teenager, and teenagers are messed up for no reason at all. You know, the whole Holden Caulfield thing. The next time I read 1984, I was a 40-something, and I had experienced love and could understand what it could be like to renounce the person you loved. What would it take for you to renounce the one you love? What would it take for you to renounce your rights as free men and women? We fought for over 800 years to restrain the state. From the Magna Carta on, our tradition has been to fight, to limit the power of the state. Would it take starvation and beatings to give up on your right to property? Would it take rats pressed up against your face to get you to renounce your right to a jury trial? Or would you let fear alone cause you to relinquish your guarantee to due process? Will we let fear of terrorism allow us to give up our most basic of liberties? When the Defense Authorization Bill came up in the Senate and the House, amendments were offered to say that no U.S. citizen could be held indefinitely without a jury trial. The Senate voted 55-45 to allow indefinite detention of American citizens. We have become Orwellian without even knowing it. The right to trial by jury was lost not in some grand battle, no cinematic final stand, but with a whimper and barely a murmur. It took hundreds of years to force monarchs to allow trial by jury, and now it is vanishing with barely a fight. But just when the realization began to settle in, a flicker of rebellion occurred. A particularly zealous senator wanted more, not just no trial by jury, but nullification of the jury's verdict. We were asked to amend the NDAA to allow indefinite detention of defendants found innocent by a jury of their peers. The amendment sponsors wanted to limit the right to trial by jury by voice vote, a process usually reserved for non-controversial resolutions. It was late by Senate standards, about 9 o'clock. I was accused of obstructing the proceedings. Everyone was tired and wanted to go home. It only takes one senator to force a recorded vote. I hesitated, but in the end I insisted there must be a vote. There was no debate granted. Proponents would vote based on the fear that we must give up our liberties to be secure. And opponents would vote, with Franklin, that those who give up their liberties for security will have neither. I was told by the sponsors of the bill, Senators Levin and McCain, not to worry, that they would remove the amendment in conference committee. Levin said the amendment only reiterated current law. I responded incredulously, current law allows people to be found innocent by a jury and then still to be held indefinitely? How can that be true? And if it is true, shouldn't we do something to stop it? I faltered and almost capitulated. I drifted toward the chamber exit and then I turned and called, I demand the yeas and nays. Amazingly, virtually all the Democrats and a handful of Republicans, including John McCain, voted to kill this assault on 800 years of jurisprudence. When I first read 1984 and A Brave New World in high school, I had trouble relating to them. I understood and was wary of Big Brother, but took consolation in the fact that government did not have two-way televisions to monitor your every action. Government didn't have drone surveillance to monitor your every move. The desire by man to control his fellow man has always existed, as has the desire by fellow man to resist. Fellow man always had places to hide. Fellow man always had places to flee. One's thoughts, one's books, one's private actions were hard to control, discern, and disrupt. Dystopian novels were just that, bad utopias, but not practically possible. One could always sigh in relief that such surveillance, such invasion of privacy was not technologically possible. Until now. Now we have the technology. Drones that measure less than an inch, weigh less than an ounce, and hover noiselessly outside your bedroom window are not a dystopian future, but today's reality. The individualist who feared 1984, when it was written in 1949, need now shout from the top of his or her lungs, for technology has made the unthinkable thinkable.